gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen. For what?
Welcome to Heavy Meta, your source for magic news, entertainment, and comedy.
What is up, all my little SVU minions? I'm Kevy Metal.
And I'm Maddie Studios.
And I'm the MTG O'Farrick.
And you're listening to Heavy Meta.
Woohoo, people, we are here. So this is, as you've probably heard, going to be our last cast before the almighty Vegas trip. And we are freaking more excited than we know what to do with. So,
yeah,
so we had to have a good guest on. Actually, it's funny enough, we had a really interesting contact off of Twitter there. The one, the only, TSG, is here tonight. Say hello, sir.
This is the first podcast I've ever been on where I feel like I really need to yell my name out to be part of the team. Unfortunately, I'm going to jam dinner down my throat as we're having this conversation, so I'll forego spitting burrito on my screen.
That's all right. We feed our guests here. This is the thing that people don't realize.
Right.
Like, when you get to the cave, we have food, we have liquor. Like, a lot of people don't eat the food, but, some people do.
Fuck. Well, Tyrone fucking went and, like, got his own fucking food because he didn't like the shit we got for him in the middle of the cast.
Look, guys, I knew I was coming into what would be, like, the Lord of the Rings style of podcasts. I've got a liter of water next to me. We just cracked a 20-ounce Red Bull, and my wife has made amazing burritos for me to chomp down on the next 3 hours. As I came home today for 5 minutes to tell her, hey, I'm doing this podcast. I'll talk to you in about 3 hours. And she gave me
I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yeah. What time does this sucker end? So, of course, we're going to kick the show off like we do with the fucking insane energy, because that's what we got to do, man.
That's right.
So, a lot of crap going down about Modern Masters, a lot of people busting packs, and I will tell you my my first experience with actual paper Modern Masters, I went to the local LGS here and went in to check stuff out. And I couldn't believe it. Like, the owner who was telling me, if you heard, the last couple times, he's going to be selling boxes for $300. And he basically said, nope, I'm not selling any boxes to anyone. I'm just drafting them now. So no more boxes being sold. And I was there, and a couple guys were cracking packs. Guy cracks a foil Tarmogoyf.
And, oh, yeah, you told me about that.
$500 cash. On the spot, $500 cash. That's insane. And Bob's, the new foil Bob, like foils of that set are absurd. So yeah. I know one of the cast members here tonight was lucky enough to get a box for $169. I don't know how he did it, but he did.
$163, dog!
So 160, of course, he gets the fucking Kevy discount. There you go. So.
My LGS sold out, couple of buddies, like Crack and Jacked, went down to go try to buy a couple packs or whatever, and they had sold out of the store stock within half an hour, and like I had pre-ordered a box, and so I actually just went and picked it up today, and 163. I was stoked.
Yeah, I watched about six cases just get shredded in one evening, gone. So it's apparently I've heard that there's like a second wave order or something like that that's going to be happening. So
it's gonna
be
a smaller shipment, though. Be wary. It's not going to be.
You think so?
Over again. I don't think so. I have
so they'll sell out in 15 minutes this time.
Sure. I don't know. I've been hearing like a bizarre like dual. Information coming from all these sources where store owners are telling me, don't worry, we'll have product. Speculators are saying, no, it's all gone, buy up, get in. And it seems to me like the store owners, like, he assured me, he's like, we'll be drafting Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays Modern Masters for at least a month. And I'm like, considering 80 people show up every goddamn time plus payout, where the hell is all those boxes coming from? That seems to be a lot, right? So, I don't know.
I'm not one for shout-outs, but I think this is a great opportunity to kind of applaud all those local game store owners that not only honored their pre-orders, but gave their regulars that MSRP price because what a joke, $6.99 a pack. I mean, that's just not how things are shaking down here. So congratulations to everybody that actually got their product for what they paid for it, you know, 4 or 6 months ago.
Yeah, that's I got to say, too, is I have to take back all the shit that I've talked about my fucking LGS for being, like, the dinky little half-toy store with a fucking a room in the back to play Magic. Yeah, I mean, it does suck in a lot of ways. You know, you guys have heard the stories about, like, some of the pre-release tournaments, and, like, that's all we have is pre-releases and now Friday Night Magic. They don't do game day or anything like that. And so, I mean, I harp on them quite a bit, but that's one thing that's cool about them. They flat out, like, they buy cards for, you know, singles for 25% of SCG, like what they have them listed for, and they sell them for 50% of what SCG sells them for. That's like how they do their pricing. And then with stuff like this, with, you know, my Modern Masters box, it, you know, they sell it to me for, you know, what they get it for. So
yeah, I mean, I'm seeing right now, like, it's $10 or $11 a pack is what seems to be the price people are paying. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know anyone. What?
I find it funny. You were saying it's how much a pack?
12. Well, I didn't say 12 yet.
How much did I tell you it was going to be?
Yeah, you were right, you fucker. You bastard. I thought somebody would at least, okay, like $7 or $8, but man, it is expensive. Who knows? I'm curious to see. So I think we got to start the show off with Kevy. You got to bust a live pack right now. Well, because
of course.
All right, get it ready. And I want to see a foil Tarmogoyf. Come on.
Hell yeah. No, I want the God pack that's got a foil Tarmogoyf and a regular.
And a regular Tarmogoyf.
Yeah, so
if that happens, like if I just disappear from the cast,
okay,
because I ran down to my game store to go sell this motherfucker.
Okay, so Maddie, since I haven't checked the price, you honestly, the foil Tarmogoyf is going for $500 right now, which is basically the same as a foil Jace.
I don't know. I don't know if it's going for that way. I saw a guy crack one, and I saw a guy take $500 bills and pay him for it. So I don't know if it's going everywhere for that, but I saw that happen, and that was insane.
Mind you, this is Canadian money, so it's not really a good barometer.
No, it is. Hey, man. 98.5 exchange rate as of today. Shut up. It's almost quite parity. All right, Kevy, what do we got?
Read through this pack, or do you want me to just tell you fucking
what's I want to know what the draft pick is. You better read all the cards.
Yeah, tell me. Let's see what I pick.
All right, I got Brute Force, Imperiosaur, Stinkweed Imp, Aether Snipe, Grape Shot, Hillcomber Giant, Perilous Research, Fury Charm, Pure Thought Depths, Aether Spell Bomb, Meadow Boon, Shrapnel Blast, Death Rattle, Life from the Loam, and the foil was a Vidalkin Dismissor.
I don't know. It depends on, fuck, there's so many draft strategies. I've been watching all of Evan Irwin's and Brad's Modern Master reviews as my homework every night. I'm trying to, like, know all the cards in the set and figure, like, what's the best draft strategy to go.
Maddie's trying to, like, fucking take this fucking tournament down. I know damn good and well I'm going to just draft all the red cards and then, you know, build a deck full of red cards and, like, splash white for Lightning Helix if I find one and then scrub out, like, round two and go get drunk at the house.
Listen.
Honestly, I wouldn't blame Matt or Kevy for grabbing a Shrapnel Blast there because it doesn't seem like there's too much removal in this set.
Right. Yeah. Like, I would have gone for the Vidalkin. Like, go blue-white flyers, maybe, like, with some bounce effects, right?
You know,
if you get some enter the battle. I know how to play green-white cards really well, but I don't know.
That Imperiosaur pretty hard here, I think. It's either that or Metaboon for me.
So, Tristan, what have you played any Modern Masters draft yet?
I have kind of taken my hands off on this one. As far as the product that I got my hands on, I haven't opened it up yet. I'm not really sure what I want to do with it yet, which isn't a whole lot.
Sorry to interrupt. That's exactly where I was stuck with too. I was like, I'm dirt poor right now because I'm trying to like get money, you know, make sure I've got enough money to handle this Vegas trip and do it right. And trying to get a bunch of other finances in order too. So I'm like, fuck, man, I'm sitting on this box I can buy for $163, and they're going for fucking between $250 and $300. It's like, fuck, dude, do I just buy the box and turn around and sell it to somebody?
Take that $100 off it and just put it on red. Right.
Yeah, just be like, yeah, exactly. Walk in, lose it all in roulette. No, it's like, do I just turn around and do that? That way, you know, I've got my money back for it. Somebody, you know, or like, I even, when I was thinking about it, when I first started thinking, like, maybe I should just sell this box or not buy it, I was like, you know what? I hit up Maddie, and I was just all, dude, I might not buy this box, but if you want it, you know, maybe I can hit you for, you know, I can sell it to you cheap. And he's just all, nah, man, I'm good. I was like, all right, well then, fuck it. I'm just going to buy it and open up the fucking packs. So,
the Wizards made a product that's just too good. I mean, if set had really just been amazing modern cards, then it would have been a lot easier to be like, ah, let's just crack the hell out of it and get all the money. But the limited format is actually so sweet, so diverse, so, like, retro Time Spiral style that it's, like, too fun. Like, I'm caught, like, really wanting to draft the hell out of it, but wishing I could just do it Phantom style and pay $2 and let somebody else leave with all the cards because it's just right. It's so fun to play with, but the price tag is just so high.
Yeah,
right. Like, do not sponsor Phantom. I hate that format on MTGO.
So here's the thing. We have to talk about this because if I got TSG here, he's going to probably know a little more. So what did you think about the whole...
Before we move on, I'm open one more.
No, don't save it. We got to spread them out for the cat.
Dude, it's like
when we're not paying attention. Oh, shit, look what I got.
So here's what I want to ask. So Commander's Arsenal, From the Vault, all these types of like sets, even Modern Masters, you know, what is your opinion? Like, the whole point as, like, I guess I'm an average player, and it really infuriates me that, you know, I get baited with these ridiculous, like, hey, you can get it for this price, and then it's impossible because that's not the real price. Like, Commander's Arsenal, like, completely jaded me, and I'm so scared for this From the Vault 20. This thing, if they do it as good as they should do it for our 20th anniversary, it's going to be ridiculous. Like, what do you think? Like, do they need to just increase the volume of these things? Are they purposely making them ridiculously hard to get?
It's not on purpose. I think what we all need to kind of just step back and understand and trying to give credit to Wizards for is that this is still a really big feeling out period for these kind of specialty products, and the game is growing a lot more now than what they're used to in terms of player growth and what they're used to putting out in terms of special products. If you go back in time, you look at, like, Anthologies, Battle Royale, the Deckmaster Box, products that they put out, you know, 10, 15 crazy years ago for these kind of, like, specialty type products. It was just a completely different magical world then. And now you've got people that, you know, Commander is its own thing. Well, it's like, well, let's make something really cool that rewards the really hardcore Commander players. Let's do something that rewards the LGSs that are premier level during the holiday season. Let's kind of give them this special bonus, similar to how they give them, like, the one holiday promo card a year. The problem is that there are so many people out there that are just fervorous for this material that's like they need to find a better medium. And I don't think this is a really good avenue to put, you know, more Sylvan libraries in the player base. And I don't think it's a really good idea to try to be like, oh, well, now here's more foil command towers. I think you need to go more middle of the road, more mass release, more Commander, like just the Commander deck style products for players, because those are the kind of things that are going to be healthy for everyone. You know, kids at LGS can walk in and probably buy those at retail. They're still going to have a lot of intrinsic value in them. Me, you know, me as a tournament player is going to want to go in and crack the Kalana one, trade off the command towers of people, sell the Path to Exiles to other people, find the one with the Scavenging Ooze. But a lot of it is just feeling it out. And I feel really bad for Wizards because they got shit on a lot for, like, oh, you guys messed up FTV or you guys messed up Commander's Arsenal.
Yeah, but they did. You have to be honest. Look at Commander's Arsenal. When it came out, everyone said, like, these aren't, you know, there was one or two money cards that were, like, absurd money cards. And then there was a lot of choices that they make that are no one wanted. Like, no one wanted them.
The interesting thing is that I think that Wizard didn't think the demand for that product was going to be as high as it ended up being.
Who's in charge there? Because how can they not know that? Like, I've been following the game now since Zendikar, hardcore. And how do you not, in marketing, analyze this data or just sit there and watch Twitter? Here's a newsflash, anyone that works at Wizard, just sit and watch Twitter. If you don't get a feel of the marketplace by just watching what people are saying, then you're an idiot because it's
you're clear. You got to realize that, A, you know, Wizards, in the grand scheme of things, recently they lost their community manager and they just kind of had that position absorbed into their company. Additionally...
Did they lose him or downsize him?
Are you guys familiar with Michael Robles?
Yep.
Well, that's what happened.
Yep. There
that's
you go.
What happened. Yeah.
So, well, so you're saying he doesn't get along with others?
But I heard it had something to do with saying proxy on Twitter.
It's, you know, it's shrouded in mystery because, you know, professionalism kind of prevails in this situation. But I'm saying you just had a person that was that's your pulse of the community type guy, because someone like Forsythe is too real. And I love Aaron, but he's been scolded too much on Twitter for being open with players about things, and they've kind of reined him in. And you also have to realize, like, I've talked to people like Mark Purvis, a brand manager. I've talked to Dave Guskin in creative, and they've really kind of had different approaches over the last couple of years that we just don't see because it's all behind the scenes. I mean, up until recently, the dual deck products were not things that were really created in-house by the R&D teams, and that's why they looked so off, or they had like really bad and weird card choices.
Yes, horrible choices. And what I don't understand is that most people, like, because when I got back, the first thing I did, funny enough, is I need to get cards. I want to buy anything I can, but I want something that I can get back into easy. I picked up dual decks, or I pick up very simple starter things, and they didn't play well. Like, I don't, like, did these people play test these cards? Or
you have to understand that it's still a learning curve that's being figured out because there's so much player growth. I mean, you guys right now are in that first kind of spurt of growth for Magic. I mean, you're obviously the most talkative and interactive about it and weigh your opinions the most. You've got to realize that you're in kind of that first next-gen class of players. They're really amped by this game, really excited to get into it. And they're looking for that kind of direction. They're looking for, like,
No. See, we're not, actually. See, I started in 94.
Well, that's whatever. We all started in 94. But then you, like, you were a teenager at one point and put down cards to get laid and some shit.
Yes,
whatever.
Exactly. Got to put these damn game away. But no, it's true. And then everyone came back in the modern era is what I kind of think of it as. Like, you know, Shards of Alara and that is, like, it seems like it's modern Magic, you know, like, that there's a lot of people that picked up at those points. And I wonder, like, do they – maybe dual decks are just not what a lot of people are buying them for. And when I – you know, when I'm at, F&M or that and I see the kids buying the products, what they really want to do is they need a product that is a casual dual deck. And then they need a standard starter dual deck, which I know – so many people that sit on the sidelines and they want to get into standard, and, you know, you may need four Boros Charms, you may need whatever, and they would love to just pick up a $19 deck that had some of the, you know, four ofs. Like, just put a real deck together that could compete.
You've got to realize that Wizard, they're trying to make these products. They're not having successes currently, but they're at least making those efforts. And that's where products like the event decks came from. And we, you know, us as tournament players, us, you know, like, I got to have four Thragtusks for this deck, four Restoration Angels, whatever. Like, we laugh at that product, but that's a step in the right direction. And if you go back to the interview I did with Mark Purvis at Worlds in 2010, I was very honest with him, and I just literally ripped into him about their shitty products, and consequently was not invited back to interview him.
That's awesome.
40-card intro decks are a joke. Those should not be introductory products. Dual decks that players can't pick up new to the game, what a perfect opportunity. Hey, a friend of
mine. Dual decks with Tybalt in them shouldn't have been printed.
Exactly.
I mean, there are opportunities.
Number two, I was loving
the Deck Builders Toolkit product when it first came around. I thought that was like the closest thing you had to, hey, do you want to start learning to play Magic? Do you want to experience the whole collecting cards and deck building process from step one and not have the guys at your local game store laughing at you? Like, buy this thing and you get to experience the early stages of what it's like to have Magic cards and actually build something halfway useful.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I haven't opened that product every year subsequently, but that's the kind of thing that I would want for people starting out and be able to kind of mash up against their friends. I think if you took two people new to the game, each got them a Deck Builder's Toolkit, each told them to play Magic with each other, that organic experience would probably be the best in all of in cardboard Magic right now to kind of get people most excited by the things that probably drew us into Magic 20 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I just think, like, it's funny. Like, I've got two young girls, right? Like 7 and 5, and they, like, you know, grow up with Magic cards, right? They love the game, and I've been saying this since day one. It's hilarious that, you know, Wizards doesn't realize, like, if you are gonna cradle to grave people, like, you should be thinking about, like, giving people the option to buy in at a super, super starter level. And I know that that's what they want Duels of the Planeswalkers to be, like, hey, learn on iPad, and then you come to the advanced level games. But, like, for dads, like we're already second generations, and it's like, you know, hey, you played with Hot Wheels as a kid, now you want to buy your kid Hot Wheels. You know, like, that's right. What it is, and it's like, I want to show my kids Magic, and it's like, well, I got to go through my whole collection, find all the elves and fairies and angels and all the stuff, and kind of build them decks. And I'm like, I wish I could just, like, you know, they love the Planeswalkers, but they're a little too complex. I love that if they could just come up with something that was like, hey, here you go. Here's like a C-level standard deck every season, you know, like here. You know, when the new set comes out, here's some cards to get you going. Maybe White Weenie, whatever. Some simple strategies. I think those would sell like crazy.
I think they're getting there. And again, it's a slow road to have to kind of till, but it's working towards that. I think that with changing to the event decks, and this is something, again, I asked Purvis about. I was like, hey, why bother putting out a product that has like one mythic, six rares, and is kind of shitty? Why not put like three mythics, a dozen rares, you know, make a few dual lands, and get it really closer to a competitive deck? And the problem was you can't really find a good middle ground on price point for that product.
Why? I thought they don't care about price.
Well,
right?
The problem is you can't. They can't affect the secondary market that much because now you have a monopoly situation. If they're gonna put half a dozen mythics and 20 rares in an event deck for standard, and then put a $99.99 price tag on it, what is that gonna do to the market? Versus if they print the exact same product and leave the $24.99 price tag on it.
Obviously, you can't put six mythics. I think mythics are
well, obvious about that. I mean, we go to standard events at FNM. I mean, what's the breakdown of the rarity of the cards in your deck?
Yeah, well, then they have to start. I mean, I think they're doing a better job now where they're trying to put the more playable cards at rare that are like going to be four ofs, and then put the more commandery type cards at mythic. But I know they do it on purpose, like with Voice of Resurgence, and like there's a card every set that they know is a mythic, they know is pushed, they know it's a four of, and that sells the set, right?
I mean, you picked like the needle out of the haystack here, where it's like that card was supposed to be a rare, but it didn't fit with the Maze Guildrunner theme. Right. Like now you have too much flavor dominating what the value of cards is going to be. That card should have been Stupid Elf Chick and her Elemental Pictured Buddy. That's what it should have been.
I would have loved that.
They didn't want that one thing to be mythic.
I don't know. So what do you think? I'm very curious to see, like, from the Vault 20, first of all, it's been like, obviously they put that thing down. They don't want to talk about it right now because they're trying to sell Modern Masters and Dragon Maze. But what have you – do you have any speculation on it? I mean, you've been with the game since the beginning. So
I think that, you know, if you want – an example of a product that's supposed to be in the right hands and handled with the right people, I'm putting my money on From the Vault 20. And you know, I'm not putting my money on it in terms of it's all going to be Monotero home runs. I'm saying that I expect this product to be full flavor with the history of Magic. Now, we already talked about how dual decks have kind of had this evolution from complete aids to kind of fun and playable.
Right,
and
right.
Would you guys say that Is It versus Golgari was a good dual deck?
I actually had a little bit of fun playing that, because that's where I got introduced to Dredge, because I didn't start playing again until fucking M12, and I, you know, heard plenty about Dredge, and that was like the first experience I had like playing with Dredge, and I actually had some fun with that.
Okay, so Is It versus Golgari is the first dual deck that was handed off to a team of people that are actually, you know, more involved in R&D, and I consider that product to be very much a Gavin Verhey baby kind of project. And Gavin is one of the people who has worked very closely on FTV20, and I put a lot of faith in him putting out a product that is going to really make people happy for nostalgia and flavor. Is it going to make people happy in the pocketbooks and make them say, like, oh, I bought it for $39.99 at my LGS and it's worth $300? Who gives a shit? That's not what it's about.
Right.
It's supposed to be about, you know, a good cross-section of Magic, a really feel-good kind of product. And
See, here's the way I look at it. Like, it's the 20th anniversary of Magic. I don't know what other game has lasted 20 years and is going up. That's
Monopoly.
Very rare. No, it's not. All those games are going down. But here's what – I mean, for the players that have been here, I don't want another Sarah Angel. I don't want the cards I have 1,000 of. I want those real money cards. That this is it's the 20th anniversary. If for once they're gonna say, "Hey guys, we're gonna give you the best 20 cards in Magic."
Okay, you know, Maddie, like, though, I have
and I'm
to
not
say,
saying
if
Black
if
Lotus.
If I have Shivan Dragon in there, I will be disappointed.
Alright, maybe. But I want to see some good, good cards, you know, like, that people are like, yeah, that card was kicking ass. Like, that was the top card, you know? If Jace the Mind Sculptor's not in there, something's off, because that was the best card that year. What do you think?
Maybe. You know, if there is any chance that Jace would see the light of day again, it would be in a set just like this. And if there's anything I hate, it's people saying, when's Jace coming back? It's going to be back right now. But again, you got to look at it in terms of Magic history and the feel goods and the make you happies. It's not about what are the most expensive cards in Magic each year between 1993 and today. How can we jam those in there as many as possible? But, I mean, you know, what's going to make you happy with this product and what's going to make you mad about this product? I think every single From the Vault set, maybe minus Legends, filled in the requirements that you've set out right now. There's at least one or two money cards where you're like, yeah, that's the meat and potatoes of this box set. And there's one or two cards where you're like, well, that's complete AIDS, but whatever. It's, you know.
Right.
I guess. I mean, I'm hoping it's the 20th anniversary. You know, like, I hope someone over there gets the weight of what this is. It's the 20th anniversary. Like, I hope it's something insane.
So to me, that means there should be a fucking Stasis in there, which there won't be. There should be a Himkorak. There should be a Necropotence. There should be, like, all these unfun cards from the early days of Magic.
No. I mean, some of those cards, I mean, obviously, one or two of them, sure, to represent that that's what Magic was back then.
Welcome to Stasis.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I have a question for you, though, Manny.
Yeah.
You're talking about this being the 20th anniversary. This is the biggest thing. Well, yeah. If you're going to go so big with the 20th, what the hell are they going to do on the 25th?
Well, I don't know.
That's where you go large, is the 25th.
Yeah, but you're just holding the carrot in front of me, man. You're just going to keep me going every year. Come on. Oh, man. I don't know. I just thought that this year, as the 20th year, it felt like it was a big thing. The return to Ravnica was awesome. I mean, so far, I think they've handled that better than any set they've ever done. I think Return to Ravnica has been amazing. And Innistrad was insanely good, so... I love where they're going. I think everything's doing great. I just wish they would try to find a new balance for some of these, like, premier products that just get spiked as soon as they hit the market and, you know, scalpers hit them. And it's very unfun for the casual player who sits here. And, you know, I have friends who, you know, either look at it like, dude, I don't want to pay for another mortgage to afford Magic because it's insane, right? And, you know, that's why we play Cube or whatever we do. And they get very discouraged with products like that. And I hope that Wizards understands that, you know, yeah, maybe there's a small bit of, like, collector crazies out that are going to pay $300. But I think the majority of people look at it and, like, Magic's too expensive for me and quit. And I think there's a negative to it, too.
The most expensive year of any year to play Magic. I mean, look at they're just jamming this year full of releases.
Right.
That's true. And
there's a lot of shit being released.
Now, so what have you heard on 214? Obviously, it looks like we're getting all the Planeswalkers back, the good old, the Lorwyn block.
Same
it looks
ones.
Like Jace. Well, it looks like Chandra will be new, but then Jace, Bellerin's back, right?
I think that the whole philosophy of Corset, as much as it was rebooted with M10, has changed even more since that kind of M-set reboot. You're now looking at a product that's going to do as much as it can, as hard as it can, to attract the new audience, the new digital audience, and integrate with Duels of the Planeswalkers. And, you know, again, if you go back to some of those interviews I did with guys like Forsyth and Purvis, you know, it's just one of those happenstances. You got lucky. I mean, you got lucky when Magic was made. You got lucky when Duels of the Planeswalkers came around, that it just linked up with an M-set release. And you were able to get all of these new players. I mean, my favorite story is I was working in a game store when Duels of the Planeswalkers was released. And we were down the street from a university. And there were groups of people that would play Magic. They would come in from the university, casual players. They would play. And a whole new crop of people who didn't even know these Magic players existed, where to find them, what Magic cards were in this current day and age, who had maybe heard of Magic when they were kids, started to walk in the front door because their Xbox told them to come in. And then they
right.
And so now Duels of the Planeswalkers is this yearly opportunity to be on the front page of Xbox Live, on the front page of iTunes.
I mean, I'll be honest. I have no problem with that. I think, actually, it's good for the game. I love it. I think it's the best thing to do. What I don't – what I'm guess I'm kind of like hitting the I'm outgrowing the M set very quickly. Like, I really like 210. I thought 211 was okay. And then it's gotten steadily, like, crappier.
And that's why you have to understand the reboot process. Because
initially
the M sets were for you. Initially there were people like you and I where it's like, you know what? I drafted 9th edition a bunch, but it sucked most of the time. Fucking freaked me where I'm going to want to play this set more than 3 times ever. And they did that. They brought us new cards. They brought us a new experience. Now you need to have resonant basic material.
Yeah.
The kid who decided to download this thing at midnight on a Friday is going to be amped enough where he's going to want to come into a comic book store 2 weeks later and be like, I've had enough fun with this. Like, you know, send me the goblins, send me the zombies. I'm into this. And
right.
It's going to move more. It's going to move away. In my eyes, it's going to move further away from the competitive players it was trying to capture back in M10, and it's going to do an excellent job of getting all those potential new players just fed up with Battlefield or whatever, and like, hey,
yeah,
this
as a delivery guy, you're absolutely right, man. I've been seeing a lot of that, because at Academy, we sell the packs, which are for the different tribes and whatnot, and those have been going on, those kind of sales have been going absolutely nuts.
Yeah, well, that, I mean, even when I got, right, tried to jump on MTO for the first time, the very first thing I did was go to, like, Academy, and I got the soldier and the elves, because that's what, that's what I used to play with. Like, I'm like, I want to get this and play with what I used to play with. So, I mean, I guess that's what's going to happen.
And I think what's important is, and, you know, if you guys are part of a community that talks about Magic, is that year after year, you know, don't spend a podcast or whatever. I'm not naming, you know, heavy meta specifically, but I'm naming people out there that are competitive Magic players that find more and more reasons to shit on core set when it's like, well, it's moving away from you, and you should love it for what it is, and you should be thankful it's bringing more and more people into the game through various elements. Because, I, you know, the last podcast I guested on this week, it was like, oh, man, M14 is the worst M set ever. And, you know, like, I love the guys over at Tap and Sack. I just did their show. But it was like, it wasn't for them, and they were really negative about it. And I was like, guys, you know, I'm not super into M14 either. Like, my favorite card out of it is a Colossal Whale, and it's not because I'm going to be slamming it and constructed, because that's just an awesome card. But be happy and be excited for what it is and the kind of audience it's reaching, because it's the main reason we have such an influx of players. People can stand around and talk about how, oh, Zendikar was the best set ever, and that made 4 times as many people show up to play Magic. That's not the case. Fetchlands and Jace did not mean
100%
played by 4.
Hey, Landfall was fun as hell, though.
It's because
it was
on the front page of Xbox Live for like an entire year. And all of these people that I had known through various walks of life that had maybe touched Magic cards at some point were like, oh my God, this thing's still around? Like, I can download it and play against a computer that doesn't yell at me when I make a wrong move, or, you know, doesn't quit because I play super slow. Like, I'm back into this game, and now I'm interested in what you're doing. Like, you've got more competitive cards. Like, maybe I'll come to one of these Friday Night Magics or a pre-release. This sounds kind of fun. It's absolutely huge for the game, and I think that M14 is another home run in that vein. I'm just a little tired of seeing Chandra, and we haven't even had the set drop yet.
Yeah, now you have to. What is your opinion? I know they're trying to create Planeswalkers as these characters, these brand icons, but they, in my opinion, like we've harped a million times, they solely do not take advantage of those brands and make action figures and all kinds of other marketing aspects they could do with them and really, really penetrate way further than they could. But hold on.
Magic action figure prototypes in the past. And I still think, you know, again, we're still in this infancy of the next age of Magic. We've got belt buckles. We've got iPhone skins. We've got messenger bags. This is all stuff that would have been way cooler in my mind, you know, 10 years ago with old symbols and old stuff on. Like, I'm not a big fan of, like, showing up with a Planeswalker symbol on a bag. Like, that doesn't really do it for me. But
or, like, the Vans tour they're doing right now. That is, I'm not sure how big skateboarding and, you know, borders are in high school nowadays, but I know when I was going through high school, it probably would have been a hell of a lot than it is now.
I don't know. They're just trying to, like, they're taking markets that their market research has said, you know, these are your target market, and they're trying to get at them. But what I was going to say is, like, what I hope they, like, I have no problem with keeping the whatever, the current 5 or the original 5 or some mixture of them in an M set, because what the fuck? I guess that's your new entry point for people, and those are the posters they've seen on their wall or their skateboard or whatever, right?
But you gotta remember that it's happy coincidence yet again. It wasn't meant to be that Jace was supposed to be the entire face of Magic.
Oh, come on. You know, when they made the Planeswalkers, they knew Jace is going to be the figurehead of the brand.
No, I can guarantee you that was not the case.
Come on.
Actually, they've done podcasts saying specifically that they were intending the Planeswalkers to be the brand.
I'm not saying Planeswalkers as a whole weren't supposed to be the face of Magic. I'm saying,
but not Jace.
It was a completely by the serendipitous thing where Jace was perfect on every single level. You have a humanoid, male, slender, mildly goth looking,
yeah,
wizard figure who just happens to be the most
badass
magic card in all of modern Magic. So from the bottom up, everyone is talking about this card. It's instantly the entire face of your game.
Okay, but previous to Jace the Mind Sculptor coming out, didn't they actually have Jace take and be in like little cameo spots instead of other movies such as Sorcerer's Stone, I think it is.
Yep.
That was Jace. I don't think that was Jace.
No, I'm talking that they had. Actual,
they had the guy like, play Magic in it, and they said you're a nerd for playing Magic. They paid.
No, I wasn't even talking about that. They had like the poster and the cutout of Jace in that movie.
Well, yeah, but that was timing. That was like World Wake.
Yeah.
The set at the time.
What I was trying to get at though is like, do you feel that they need to either start like obviously what it seems to me is they don't want a million Planeswalkers running around. Because it's skewing the game in a certain power level, and they're obviously scaling back the power of Planeswalkers, but it seems they're also not like willing to push the power of them in the core set, where I'm hoping Chandra is going to be the first good version of her, where we get a 3-mana badass Planeswalker.
I mean, that just sounds like a tournament Magic player to me. I don't think that's really like the reality of the situation.
Really? But we have so many versions of Planeswalkers that are like unique, like Tybalts. I don't want no more Tybalts. Like I think it's time we need, you know, like Jace Bellerin, 3-mana draws cards. He's not overwhelming. He's just a tool in a deck that kicks ass. I would love like Chandra to be. I don't care if she's super powerful, but just be useful. You know, like
I don't think that's corset though. That's not the kind of like.
No?
Pop and excitement that you want for the face of your game. I mean, I think if anything, you're looking at another 5 or 6 mana Chandra that's probably going to have like Inferno style ability that's going to really be eye popping to new players.
You got to flip 20 coins.
Yeah, Maddie, they might end up doing something like that to some degree because I can see them doing like a 3-mana Chandra, but it'll probably end up doing like what a Johnny did. There is, it'll still be useful in its own niche. It just might not become an actual tournament card.
Maybe. Okay, what do you think about Theros, Tristan? I'm very curious what you think. If this is a good idea, a bad idea, do you think they've come off...
Say this idea, what exactly do you mean?
Okay, so, like, we've come off Gothic Horror, then we went to, you know, Return of Ravnica, and now we're doing Greek. We're doing that whole Greek-Roman thing, right? Is there enough juice there to tell a block? Like, you know, a whole setup? Oh. No dirty jokes there.
You know about like just if you chose Greek and Roman mythology, I think that you could do 3 sets of that, no problem.
I mean, it's sad. I'm excited. I think it could be very interesting. I guarantee you, like we said last cast, there's going to be some legendary theme because with the rules. Which I'm very curious to see what you think of that. Do you think that was a good idea swapping the legendary rules around?
I mean, when I the last time I really talked about it was mostly relating it to Cube because that's what we play every day. It definitely, and I feel this actually applies to everything. It opens up a lot more play space, play opportunities, and more opportunities for better players to play better. I think by just having this kind of like time cop syndrome of we're both in the same place, we touch each other, we die, is just like it resonates with players and they feel like. Thematically, but it doesn't offer a lot to gameplay. And I mean, I don't like the idea of Phantasmal Image being Doomblade 9 out of 10 times you cast it. Instead, I think there's a lot more play to it's like, well, now in Legacy, and both players have Jace, how much more play to the game is there than one guy casts Jace, has a huge advantage, the next guy has to cast it, use his entire term to play Vindicate for 4 mana, and then he's already just buried under the card advantage of the other player. I think that it's 99% positives. I mean, I'm not looking forward to
really
like Moloku versus Moloku fights. I'm not looking forward to like other legends. I mean, I think there are some cards out there that were designed in the days of old that don't really play well with the idea of there being two on the battlefield. But I think that, again, 99 times out of 100, this is just a new play area that's going to lead to better play experiences, more opportunities for interactions.
Okay, but now you've just turned threaten effects into Doom Blades.
Okay, that's fine. You've just changed the flavor to it. I think that...
I actually don't mind that.
Yeah, if anything, colors like red need more of the pie. If you took the engines away from blue and gave it to red, I'd be fine.
You know what I don't mind?
Burning foil, people's faces.
A foil Elspeth and a Blood Moon in this pack.
Oh, you did not get a foil Elspeth.
Yeah.
Oh, damn. That is nice. Old art Elspeth. Woo. Damn.
Oh, yeah.
Good draw, man.
Stoked on that one. Sorry, had to interrupt there.
For that, you may. You may interrupt. Now, we're going to go down memory lane because I have to, you know, since TSG is here, I have to just compliment him on when he was first doing the videos on Channel Fireball. I think, you know, in LSV and especially doing the draft videos and the top 10 lists, the one thing at the time that Magic was sorely missing at that point, like for players coming in, and that's just when I got back in, is, you know, the game was a little more complicated than I remembered. It was kind of hard to get back into things, and especially with MTGO, it's like, what the fuck is this horrible thing? I can't figure shit out. I don't even know what I'm doing. Very confusing. And watching, you know, you guys play the draft videos and do the top 10 listable cards, it was so entertaining. I mean, I have to compliment you. I mean, I think you've gotten more players back in the game through those videos than your time at Channel Fireball, even though it, whatever turned out, sour or whatever, but... Yeah, I gotta give it to you, man. I think you were the most entertaining guy on that entire video series, hands down.
I have no idea why you're sucking me off so hard. I have nothing to offer.
No, I'm serious. I'm not trying to. I'm just like dead serious. Like I honestly.
My deepest gratitude, my greatest thanks. I feel like, you know, I again, it's kind of happenstance. I think that, you know, we kind of started that video series and we started doing more, ramping up what we were willing to and able to do around the time of Zendikar, just as more people were coming back to the game. So to me, like, you know, looking on the outset, I don't feel like I had an impact because I feel like the players were going to show up anyway. So it's always really nice to hear these kind of compliments where it's like, you know, hey, I listened to your stuff, I watched your stuff, I loved your stuff. I mean, I've met some people. Some of my favorite stories, there was a guy actually on the Magic Cruise that I was on. He was an older gentleman from Georgia. With his wife, they were on the cruise, and his wife had a bone to pick with me because every week, at least once a week, one night, she wouldn't be able to talk to her husband because he would be
watching video.
And she was not very happy about that. And like, you know, meeting people like that was just insane. I mean, I met a guy in Nagoya, Japan, who, when I was doing my old podcast, he came up to Nagoya, shook my hand, wanted to take me out for a drink because he's like, dude, you know, I sit in the train every day and I commute. And I listen to your podcast every week, and I love it, and I feel like I know you. And I was like, well, that's awesome. You don't speak Japanese very well. You're English. You're a Magic player. You're out here for business. It's amazing that I can kind of bring you that experience every week, and you're super into it.
Now tell me honestly, did you on purpose try to wear a different hockey jersey every episode? Or do you just have that many hockey jerseys?
Well, at this point, I've got close to 60. Though there was one like season, like, so the kind of the rule of thumb around my house is you can only wear the hockey jersey preseason till end of the playoffs. That's the only time of year you can wear them.
Oh.
So you got to use that time wisely. So
I see.
There's one like season of hockey that kind of lines up with Magic TV where every week I'm wearing a different team in reverse alphabetical order. So like the first week of preseason, I'm wearing Washington, and then just pulls back for like 30.
That is so pathetic that you have that. That's so organized that you're like, I'm gonna go a reverse alphabetical order.
Well, I didn't want to go like straight up alphabetical because I thought that would be too obvious, and I wanted to have like that one percenter where like somebody halfway through the run like kind of figures it out and sends it back.
They're like, oh my god, he's going backwards, that master. Now hold on, I gotta say like because I know shit went down, and we're not going to get into that whole thing, but I have to ask you an honest question because, you know, I was a fan. Like, Evan Irwin and you produced the best video content at that time, and, you know, I owe you guys, and I feel anyone that produces good content should be rewarded because that's fucking hard work, and it's awesome, and, you know, I want to owe you. So I'm going to ask you straight up, And you can give me your best honest answer. But it sounded to me like when all that crap went down, the good old bonfire gate, did you get screwed over? Because it sounded to me like I know you're playing legal ease, but I just want you to know that if the truth is that you got screwed over there, then I'm 100% behind you. Just well, so you know.
Well, thank you, and yes, all in the same breath.
All right.
I tried to take the high road in that situation, and it was very, very hard. And I think that the thing that hurts the most is you have someone like Luis, who is a figurehead, and his name is just on something when he's not attached to anything. And I'm involved in a business where I'm not as deep into it as people think I am. I'm not the owner. I'm not the content manager even. I'm not the things that they think I am.
So were you just a face? Like, did they just throw it at you and say, hey, you're good on camera, you start doing this, and didn't realize the power that they gave you? Because your perceived power was, like, all in all honesty, I thought you owned Channel Fireball.
Well,
you were there all the time.
It's the factors. I mean, when you have some parties that don't want to be on camera, I mean, you know, at the time, like, I had conceived the concept of Magic TV. I had conceived, like, you have access to Luis. You really need to have a show where it's the amateur and the professional.
Yep.
You need to have the guy who's in the trenches at FNM every week with all the casual players, the guy that only shows up to Grand Prix and Pro Tours, and you need to have them have a conversation. And at the time, and, you know, through most of it, like, I am always – I see Magic at the lowest levels to the highest levels. And I always want new players to start playing, and I always want them to feel included and want to keep pursuing playing the game at whatever level they want to. And I came up with this idea, and I was not the first choice to be that person, and I kind of just had to take a back seat on it for a long time. And finally, when I had the opportunity, I jumped at it. I was like, hey, you know, I want to do this, not only because do I have faith in my ability to hold half the frame with Luis, but I know the right questions to ask. I know the right information. You know, there was a period of my life where I lived this game, sun up to sundown, and I can't believe I managed to get married during part of that time. I am one of these days, my wife's just going to come back at me like, yeah, remember that 5 years of our life where you were
just owe my ass. Yeah, you're out. Now, obviously, you know, I think you're one of the best on-air personalities in the game, and I'm very curious. I mean, me and Kevy and Ferret, we talk about this constantly, that there is this push by Magic to be more professional, to be like a sport, you know, especially with their Pro Tour coverage, which, you know, in all honesty, they're getting very good. It's getting better and better every time. But do you honestly feel, and I need your inside opinion, of why on earth was there a Channel Fireball team and a Star City Games team, yet what just staggers the mind of the casual person watching, people jump on other people's team and they're like, hey, what's up, buddy? I'm wearing a sticker, but I'm wearing your shirt, but I'm playing with Star City Games sleeves. And really, I don't know, like, explain to me what goes on there. Is there really no rivalry? Yeah, but is there no rivalry? Is it just bullshit? Hey,
that's a good point. Don't block Kevy out here. there isn't that WWE rivalry that you kind of assume that there is. And, you know, someone like Aaron Forsythe goes a long way in saying, like, Magic doesn't need any more bad guys. There's going to be no more Mike Longs in Magic if Aaron Forsythe has anything to do with organized play. Because it's all about people coming together as a community and having fun and delving into this game as much as they can. It's not East meets West and who's going to win. That's they're trying to stay away from that. And you have to understand that for the very large majority, once you get to that elite level of player, there's only so many of you guys, and you're going to want to share information. You're going to want to work together. You are friends. You travel to these Grand Prix, and on if it's Saturday night and you didn't make day two, or if it's Sunday night and you're celebrating with the guy with a trophy, you don't not hang out with Team Star City Games because you're from the other side of the tracks. That's not how it works. You're just friends with these people, and some companies have decided to give you compensation in one form or another to wear the right shirt, use the sleeves, rep the logo, write the tournament report.
But wouldn't Channel Fireball say, hey, you can't, you know, like, if we're paying you or, you know, whatever, you don't, you know, at least have some separation where that you could build.
You guys can
story.
Be friends behind the scenes,
yeah,
but you
exactly.
have to hit each other with chairs while you're on camera.
Well, if you guys want to go take your pants down behind camera, do whatever you want. But like on camera, like at least have a story, because it's like I was, like, expecting this huge rivalry. Not, like, you know, they'd hate each other, but, like, they would compete at a hard level. And I find it funny, like, Owen Turnwald, like, watching him jump teams was like, what the hell's that? I don't know. It's just...
You got to understand, it's not heels versus faces. It's guys trying to play the game at the best of their ability. And it's smart for Owen, you know, coming off of Player of the Year to be like, well, you know, I want to get back into this. I want to, you know, work with a group that I'm going to work well with. This is the group I'm going to work well with. They just happen to be under a different banner that doesn't really mean anything. It's not like the Starks and the Lannisters are beheading each other in the street over magic, and that's nothing that organized play wants. I mean, they like the idea of showcasing a team because it's people working together collaboratively for one goal, you know, meeting from all over the world. I mean, the reason they love showcasing people like Luis's group is that he has Japanese, Czech Republics, you know, Canadians, Brazilians, all meeting together at this kind of like magic summit to be some of the best minds there are. That is the feel-good love story of magic. It's not, you know, it's not, what's West Side Story? Something about blades.
Who knows?
Something.
Now, okay, so then tell me, like, because the biggest thing, I guess, that started this whole thing is I was the biggest fan of Brad Nelson on Channel Fireball. Like, because I disagree with paying for articles and videos like Star City Games model, and I really like that Channel Fireball didn't charge you because, you know, everything's expensive in the game, and like if I don't have to pay for that and I get the same quality or better, then I'm gonna go with it.
That's what it should be. Information is free.
I
completely agree. I've never paid for any of these services. I never plan on it, and you know, I love the work that people like Patrick and Brian do over at Star City.
I'm not saying they don't do good work. It's just, you know, I think they charge, whoever's in charge, I think they charge too much damn money for it, and I don't think it's fair. But the question I was going to ask...
I hope that she can have a well-paying job that keeps a roof over her head. I think that for people like Lauren Lee and even to an extent Glenn Jones, like if they're going to bring you all that stuff, they need to derive a paycheck from something. And it's not, you know, it's not all like warm hugs and kisses that keeps the roof over their heads. So, you know,
I guess
pay for the ability for them to do the things they do.
I guess I would like to see the financial breakdown of like where that money goes. But anyways, what I was going to ask is what happened? Tell me what happened, because when I watch Brad Nelson going for Player of the Year, and then all of a sudden when he accepts the trophy, he had a Star City Games shirt on.
Only the ugliest Star City Games shirt ever.
I was like, what the fuck? Did a coup just happen? What happened? Like, what is Insight throwing that? Because no one, I've never heard of, like, what happened? Did he screw you guys over at the last second, or was it a big hug fest and you guys were like, nah, you can have him now? Like, what happened?
I mean, again, like, I think that people read too much into it. It's not, you know, it's not the Yankees trading with the Red Sox. It's not a deal has to be struck up. It was, you know, and it's magic, and it's not guys like with contracts written in stone. It's like an agreement usually made over dinner, and then, you know, you just consistently keep turning things in exchange for compensation.
Right.
And Brad just, he wanted to do other things, and he saw opportunity to do those other things with Star City Games that he couldn't do where he was at currently. And, you know, knowing Brad as a friend, I think he was really happy with the opportunities that were given to him by doing that. And he's really carved out a place for him, which, you know, this is what you want to do. When you, if you get put out to pasture as a card game player or as an athlete, you want to make sure you have a home.
True.
And I think that some of the best examples of that, you know, obviously when you think about Magic, you think about the poker boom when it thinks about terms of money. And you got guys like, you know, Howard Lederer back in the day. Well, did you ever see that guy play in a tournament? No. You always saw him in the commentator booth on fucking Fox Sports Poker Night or whatever, because there's more money to get the consistent paycheck of being the guy who's like, yeah, that's a good play, that's a bad play. And, you know, Brad, to his – I'm not saying he did it for the money and the consistency. I'm saying he did it because he wanted to be a mainstay and he wanted to be a facet of that community, and now he's doing that. I mean, he's the guy sitting next to Evan – you know,
yeah,
to the, all these sets. I mean, that, and that's great for him. And that's something that he made a conscious decision to have access to and to do. And to me, it's not about wearing an ugly T-shirt while sitting in Paris. It's about knowing what opportunities you have by taking those chances.
And you know what it is, too? It's funny. Like, I'd watch, like, LSV and PV, you know, do card reviews, and it's like, this card's shit, this card's garbage. It's not blue, then it's crap. And then I watch Brad, and the one thing I love about Brad and Evan is, there's a passion about the game that, like, oh, man, this comment is sick. I can't wait. And a lot of people call it, you know, over-enthusiasm. But it's great to see that, like, yeah, that's cool. Like, maybe you can play with a card. Everything doesn't have to be standard. Maybe there's a casual way to have some fun with it. And I really love that. And I think too many people, like you said before, like, they focus too much on, like, standard playability. And there is that aspect of the game, and it's great to be competitive. But, you know, if 90% of the cards are garbage in every set, then this is the biggest scam ever. They're selling us all garbage.
And I think that this is a really a flaw with the Magic community right now, is that so much emphasis in what's written and produced to you in video form is based on competitive play, that all the other content, all of the casual base content, is almost like looked down and shunned upon. It's like, if the guy who won the last PT writes a set review for the next set, you hold that up as gospel. But if some guy on a small site has a lot of passion about a commander deck or an archetype or a casual draft format like Cube, they're like, oh, whatever, that's just some nobody spouting off about something. It's not like a free flow of information. It's like, oh, that's an interesting idea, or I've never considered that card, or oh, that, he's actually talking about how that fits into a mana curve in a draft strategy that might actually be interesting. It's about, you know, I have to read what Alexander Haine wrote. He just won a Pro Tour.
Well, it is interesting to hear what Haine has to say. That I can't disagree there. Go Team Mana Deprived. But anyways,
Richie,
I want to get Haine.
Oh yeah,
I want to get Haine drunk on our show sometime.
Oh my god, he's hilarious drunk. We will. Well, Vegas will have many opportunities.
You guys are gonna have the perfect opportunity there in Vegas.
No, yeah. I mean, I want him to come on as a guest on the show and just get him hammered.
Now,
CSG, we didn't make you get drunk tonight. You should feel special.
And I don't know if this made it on the show already. I had to book it to get here. I barely got in front of the call at 6 o'clock. I've got the liter of water next to me. I've got most of my dinner sitting on the other side of me. I was able to just get in the door and be like, I can be here to do this.
And we appreciate that. We appreciate
Hell yeah, we do.
Now, this is a very controversial question, but, like, what do you think? Do you honestly believe that MTGO is the future of the game? That eventually, I mean, I'm not saying cards will die. I'm just saying that there's going to be a next generation of players that are going to grow up playing digital Magic.
Duel of the Planeswalkers is the future of Magic.
Ugh. Now, see, I hope that's not the future of Magic, because I don't like that.
It's not the wrong way, though. It's a gateway drug.
Yeah, gateway's fine. Yeah.
The thing about Magic is, look at you and look at your friends, and especially look at your friends under the legal drinking age. If the power goes out, what do these people do for entertainment other than, like, manually jacking it? Like,
yeah, doing it manually sucks.
Well, in Canada, they're probably gnawing on maple trees. I don't know what the fuck they're doing, but...
I mean, if the power goes out and you can't watch the Leafs game and you can't get on Xbox Live, what are you going to do? You're going to put that like your Magic cards. That's what you're going to do.
Man.
And that aspect of the game is my absolute favorite thing about it. That is, as much as we get saturated with digital technology, and we are constantly plugged into something, that I can still go to the middle of the woods on a weekend, any time of the year, bring my friends and know how to play cards, and have the best time possible out there playing Magic just without electricity.
I don't know why you need to go to the middle of the woods, DSG, but if that's how you roll, that's fine with me.
He's all, I like to be in nature when I'm playing.
I live in the redwoods now. I gotta embrace it. You know, I don't have to shovel snow. I gotta enjoy something.
That's true.
Personally, I'd be sitting there playing poker and taking their money, but that's just me.
Well, kids can't afford that. They'd rather have our standard decks.
Yeah, they just blew all their money on Voice of Resurgences, man.
Holy shit, man.
I got a good draft pack for you guys as a fucking interruption.
All right, hit us.
All right. Make sure I grab the one. There we go. All right. So we got Giant Dust Wasp, Deep Cavern Imp, Torrent of Stone, Blight Speaker, Rift Elemental, Search for Tomorrow, Otherworld Journey, Absorb Vis. What the hell is that?
That's a card from Conflux.
I just don't know how to pronounce that. Is that Vis?
You're butchering the shit out of that.
I don't give a shit. Moth Dust Changeling, Blind Spot Giant, Etched Oracle, Spell Snare, Grinning Ignis, Gifts Ungiven, or a Foil Tooth and Nail.
Oh, the Foil Tooth and Nail, dude. That's a sick
that's
card.
Cash.
Even if this was a top 8 draft for GP Vegas, I'm probably still taking Tooth and Nail. Pick one.
Really? Not gifts?
Pretty bad limited pack.
No, I was just kind of curious, like, I mean, obviously, like, the tooth and nail, like, I don't know, like, do you take gifts, like, as far as playability goes, I mean, do you take gifts or do you take tooth and nail?
No, you take tooth and nail.
Yeah, because tooth and nail is an instant win, depending on what you're, you're going to probably get a bomb.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I knew more about the because it's sealed, right, in Vegas? It's Modern Masters sealed.
Now, I asked this on Twitter last weekend. All these people that are going to Vegas for the GP, has anyone in their friends stopped and taken a box of Modern Masters and done some sealed deck yet? Because that seemed like a pretty important exercise.
Yeah, that's that was what I was planning on doing, but I couldn't get any fucking cards. Hopefully I can go to the store, maybe this weekend and get a draft in, because I'd really like to know the speed of the format and sealed, like how different it is via draft.
We're going to mess with it on Friday. Like, I, after thinking about this, like, I don't have the self-control, of course, not to open these fucking packs. But because my friends and I aren't, like, super experienced in fucking draft or sealed. I mean, we've done the pre-releases, and I've done some draft stuff. But we're not smart enough to, like, really catch on to the big signals or anything. And because there's only, like, four of us in the main playgroup, I've just been, like, cutting the tops of these packs, and I'm putting them back in the packs.
Yeah, there you go.
And we're just going to roll like that. Like, I mean, yeah, I've seen, like, I'm not going to remember on Friday, like, what was in what pack. And so, I mean, it'll be fairly, you know, at least fun to do. Because I was like, my friends were just, oh, we have to draft that shit. I'm like, yeah, well, if you're at my house waiting when I come home with it, maybe. But, yeah, you really think I'm going to have the self-control not to just open these motherfuckers? But, yeah, so I've just, like, slit the tops of the packs so that I could slide them out, slide them back in. And we're going to probably do that. And I'm wondering if maybe fucking sealed might not be a bad idea. Oh, wait, I can't.
So, Kevin,
yeah, we could do sealed.
What pack are you on?
Oh, I opened them all already.
So what were your big hauls? You got foil Elspeth, foil tooth and nail.
I got foil tooth and nail, foil Elspeth. Let's see, what else did I get, like, geared-wise? No Goyves or Bobs, kind of sucked. But, see, I got Maloku's all right.
Did you get any of the dragons?
No, I don't think I got a single dragon. I did get, let's see, I got Progenitus, Sword of Fire and Ice.
And Shackles.
Novadolk and Shackles. Sword of Fire and Ice is another good one.
Oh, that's sick. I love the new sword art, man.
Hell yeah.
God.
Arcbound Ravager. But basically that foil Elspeth was the big one.
Jesus, I don't even want to know.
Foil Elspeth and the foil tooth and nail were the big ones.
Now, Kevy, you're going to want to know this from TSG here. So, TSG, what is the biggest scumbag story? As obviously, because you've been on the other side of the counter, so you've seen the guys trying to shark the people in the store, maybe even seen the guys that tried to sell you bullshit. What have you seen? We need an epic story.
We gotta have an epic scumbag story.
I don't like sharing these stories.
We don't care. You're on the show. You got it. It's part of your contract.
You can change the names. You can change the names to, you know, protect the innocent or scumbags.
I can. Oh, okay. Well, if I could do this without naming any names, I think that probably in the last 2 years, the most aggressive, egregious playing for a decent amount of money move I've ever seen was somebody was playing against Primeval Titan. There were Primeval Titans on both sides of the battlefield.
Okay.
And the guy who got to attack first attacked with his Primeval Titan. And as quickly and as definitively as his opponent could possibly say, he made it very clear he wasn't going to block, and asked his opponent if he was okay with the fact that there were no blocks, so that you would have effectively completely missed the trigger that was extremely critical to the match that might have been being played for top 8 of a Grand Prix.
Ooh.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, but you can't, because doesn't the player, like, even if you say that. Like, so you're saying as soon as I say no blocks, I've missed that attack step?
It's like, not so. Okay. I'm a guy attacking
where
with.
Where the hell is everybody at?
My opponent says, no blocks. Now, the guy who's attacking the Primeval Titan, let's say he just goes and kind of, like, says, mm-hmm, or maybe, okay, like, I hear what you're saying. The player on the other side of the table has now inferred, okay, that means we've gone past blockers. which means we've gone past attacking
the trigger. Okay.
Which means we've gone past when you have the opportunity to go get lands. I'll take six. Okay, is it my turn? I'll attack you with Primeval Titan, and before blocks, I'll search my deck for two lands.
Dirty. Dirty, dirty.
And let me just say that the attack step in which the phrase no blocks was uttered took another few minutes to kind of resolve itself angrily during that situation, and multiple judges were like, well, I've got bad news for you, sir. He asked if you had blocks. He said no blocks. You said yes. And it was this terrible, terrible, like, he said, she said, yeah, good game. Enjoy trying to make top 16.
Dirty. Now, have you ever seen anyone try to, like, shark someone for cards? Like, you know, because you're the trader. You've probably been through that whole thing. Like,
when it comes to trades, I've seen it all.
You've seen it all.
It's like, I have watched $100 difference in value trades take place in front of my eyes while I held my tongue. And I've stopped. I mean, pretty much anyone under legal voting age, like, I feel a little more inclined to kind of step in and say something. I mean, obviously, when you're the aggressive trader in the situation, you don't want to, you know, you don't want anyone to kind of get in on your situation. And people will definitely give you the stink eye if you walk up to their trade and they think they have the better end of something and you don't want you to say anything. Because who wants to be that guy who walks up and is like, Hey, stay away. Hey, by the way, that card's actually worth like three times as much as you think so. The foil's worth 10 times as much as the regular, not one time or twice as much.
Yeah, you have to be the guy that at least is willing to say, hey, this is, you might want to recheck what the value there is because I don't think that's working right for you.
In the last almost 2 years, it's been a completely different world. I mean, you really don't see, you know, kids showing up without the smartphone to double check all their prices. It's such a crazy different world now. I mean, there still are a lot of there. I mean, I wouldn't call them corner cases because there are a lot of them, but there are niche cards, niche situations where it's like, you know, people still kind of assume what's like, well, a foil is worth twice as much. It's like, actually, no, commander players, casual players,
three times,
cube players want that stuff. That's like 6 to 8 times value. Yep. Regular. You can't just two for one that situation.
Yeah. Now, what is this? I've heard this rumor here about you, and what is it, Comic Book Man or AMC's? What are you actually going to be on a show?
I am going to be on.
Shut up.
The next season of Comic Book Man.
Well, and we Heavy Meta breaks the news. Interesting.
Yeah. I guess right. You're like the third. I mean, you're the first vocal source. Like, I posted something on Twitter about it the other day, just because.
Don't
like,
take this away from us.
Okay. Yeah, breaking news, Heavy Meta. I will tell you the whole story.
Tell us.
Sweet. Exclusive and shit.
Exclusive. I will tell no one else. My
bullshit,
parents,
you liar.
Don't even hear about it. I'll tell you know what? Listen to 2 hours of Heavy Meta, you'll hear the story.
Yeah, there you go. So how did this happen? How did you even get on that?
So what happened was a few weeks ago at this point, Kevin Smith had posted something on Twitter about like kind of an open opportunity to try to get on the show. And it was just a link to an AMC page where you filled out a questionnaire, you know, your age, your interests, you know, did you want to be a buyer on the show? Do you want to be a seller on the show? Tell us about items you have. Tell us about your background, yada, yada, yada. So I filled this whole thing out and sent it in. And, you know, obviously you don't think twice about that kind of shit because you're like, you know, no one's ever going to call me back, but whatever.
Right.
And, you know, they wanted stuff that was more comic book centric. And at this point in my life, I don't have a whole lot that's really like comic.
So, were you a comic collector? Like,
well, obviously. Comic, I've been into collectibles my entire life. Whatever it was, right. I mean, you know, from 84 on, that was me.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I just like, I had a couple of Star Wars action figures from the mid 90s that were signed by Harrison Ford and Mark Hamill. And they'd been things like I had always kind of like moved with me every time I moved throughout like my adult life.
Now, hold on. I don't want anything coming out in the future about you stealing action figures from some store. Because then, you know, it's all out the window. Then I'm like, man, I can't take two in one deal, right? So there's none of that action going on, right?
So, I...
He's a master. He's a master. He's just like, I'm just skirting this topic right here.
Do you want to hear the story?
No, yes, tell me.
All right. So I submit my little, you know, like almost resume for their show for this thing to them. And I get a call back from one of their producers. And they're like, oh, you know, we love your story. you know, we love that, you know, you're telling us you're in your late 20s, you're finally going back and get your film degree, that you want to make your own movies, which is all true. Like, I went back, I'm now trying to finish up my bachelor's in digital film. She's like, I love your story. You know, we love this whole concept. Do you have anything else that you might be interested in selling? And she kept pushing this. Like, is there anything else? Is there anything else? And I was like, I don't know. Like, you know, I have the original first printings of Wolverine Origins from like 2000. I have a couple issues of Spider-Man Black. Like, I could probably go through and try to look for some other stuff. Like, what are you really looking for? And she's like, I don't know. You're like, I have to show this to the executive producers. I have to show this to the big wigs. You know, do a little video for us, put it on YouTube, let us see what you have, and we'll get back to you. So I left that phone call and I was like, well, it's really cool. They called me back. It's really great. They love my story. What can I really do for them? And recently, my uncle, who is an incredible, incredible guy, he is like a legitimate genius. Like, I'm not throwing that word around like, dude, this guy's a genius. He has a doctorate in criminal psychology, two master's degrees, one in education, and a bachelor's in, I don't know, like Italian or some shit. he is the psych warden head for Pelican Bay Prison in California. It's the kind of place where you go in and you never come out.
Right.
So my uncle is a genius, and he's a collector. He's collected all kinds of crazy shit over his life. He has a marble collection, a bottle cap collection, a gun collection. And, you know, recently, you know, like, I think when I turned 18, he gave me this, like, binder of, like, old Garbage Pail Kids. You guys remember those?
Oh, my God. Are you kidding? I have all those still.
Well, you think you have all of them. Well, you're fucking wrong, because I... so recently my uncle was diagnosed with cancer, and before you hem and haw, he knew it was coming. He drinks like a fish, smokes like a chimney. The guy, I can't believe he's made as long as he have. He is incredible. He lives off of scotch and cigarettes.
Just like Kevy.
I was going to say, that's what I do.
So, you know, again, one of the reasons I've been listening to more podcasts is I've been kind of like driving up and down California a lot more. And, you know, went and visited him, and he's got, you know, what to him is like the definitive collection of Garbage Pail Kids. And I didn't really know it. And he's like, you know, hey, do you mind like kind of, you know, like, I'm ready to start like unloading some of the things I own. Do you want to sell this for me? Like, I'm just looking to get a little bit back, but I know that, you know collectibles, you know cards. Can you take care of this for me? And I was like, oh, of course, you know, no problem. Took the stuff back home. It was like two thick, just monster binders full of cards, a suitcase just full of stuff, and another giant box full of stuff. And it was like, well, you know, I've got a midterm coming up. I've got a documentary film project I've got to work on. Like, I'll get to this shit eventually. But I was thinking about, you know, I got to do this video. I got to send some shit. And I was like, well, you know, Garbage Pail Kids are pretty old. We're talking like 1985, 1986.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this stuff's kind of aged a little bit. So I do a little, you know, like 2-minute blurb to the producers. I'm like, you know, here are my action figures. Here are their COAs. Like, here's the fronts, all this stuff. And I was like, oh, by the way, I have these Garbage Pail Kids. Like, my uncle did a great job categorizing them. I just kind of showed him a couple of the binders. I was like, it looks like he has complete sets. Here's series 1. Here's series 8. Here's series 9. Like, he has them all. Like, every single series, he has a complete set, A and B versions, as well as, like, a marker pack for each series that's a sealed pack, like, with the gum in it still. And I'm thinking,
I've done
a little bit of research, and, like, series 1 complete near mint is, like, $300 to $400 retail.
What it is? Holy crap.
And I was like, okay, well, if that's, you know, if that's series 1, and you have to assume, you know, just like magic, series 2 was printed more than series 1, series 3, so on and so forth. I was like, if it kind of spins down in value, I've probably got like $1,500, maybe $1,800 worth of stuff. So I send in the video. I don't hear anything for a week. And I'm thinking like, oh, my story must not have been good enough. Like, my shit's not worth enough. You know, whatever. It was fun while it lasted. Now I get a call from another producer, and she's like, okay, so, you know, we like your action figures. We love your story. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense for our show, story-wise, for you to fly out from California to come to Jersey to sell what's like, you know, $200 in action figures total. But tell me more about these Garbage Pail Kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, not only tell me more, but the guys on the show have a wish list of items they're actively looking for, and you have, like, hit the hot spot. They really want Garbage Pail Kids. So tell me what you really have. And I was like, well, I guess I'll break this shit open and see exactly what I'm sitting on, because I thought those binders were like the cream of the crop. You know, that's complete sets. Like, what more do you want? So I go home, crack open these suitcases, and inside is like the mother load. We are talking like
Original booster box is sealed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
No way, really?
Oh, yeah.
Holy shit.
Oh, unopened gum packs. Like, just ridiculous stuff. Like, not only does he have all of that, he has the 1986 Mad Magazine issue completely dedicated to...
I have that. Yes.
Kids. He's got the oversized overprint cards. He's got, like...
Does he have the poster, the collectible poster that has all the cards in it?
Oh, he's got the ad slicks that you put up in comic book stores for the cards.
That's so sick.
He has, like,
those are cool.
Handwritten catalogs of all the stuff he has, every single set he has, and all of his duplicates are in individual little tiny like manila folders inside of his box.
That was before card sleeves and the hard cases.
Every single one is individually handwritten labels. Like, this is card 182A in a little tiny manila envelope. I open it up, there's like six copies of that card.
So he had major ACAD or OCD, right?
Oh, my uncle, he is incredible. I mean, the man is a certified genius, and he obviously takes collecting very seriously. So I'm looking at this shit, and I was like, this is insane. Like, you can't ask for anything more. And now I'm like, okay, well, I've got to make a new video. You've got to show it to executive producers. And the thing they were asking me this next time was like, okay, well, now we love your story. Now we love your product. Now we got to get an idea of exactly what you're bringing us and exactly what your expectations are to sell it for. And I was like, right. At this point, like, this stuff is, like, invaluable. You can't replicate this collection. This is
no, that's a museum collection is what it is.
So just this week, made another video to send into the producers and kind of, you know, laid everything out, went over everything. And I was like, you know, at the end of the day, this is probably like a $5,000 to $7,000 collection. And I don't even know if that's really ballpark because I've only been able to do some preliminary Wikipedia-style research. There's not exactly an active market locally for this kind of thing.
Yeah.
At this point, you know, the producers call me back. It's like, yeah, awesome. We love it. We have 8 weeks of shooting in July and August. We just need to figure out when we can fit you in. We'll fly you out to Jersey. You'll be on the show.
That's awesome.
Right on. That is badass.
That is cool, man. So what are you going to wear? What shirt are you wearing? Don't you say New Jersey Devils.
To ask me. So you're still within the first dozen or so. So part of me was like, you know, hey... I want to appeal to the guys there and kind of play nice. I was like, I should probably show up in some Devil's outfit. But I was like, I don't want, you know, that's not me. I'm not going to just pander like that. And then I was like, well, what I could do is I could just show up. I could figure out who the biggest rival of the Jersey Devils are and just show up in that. I could play off that angle as much as I wanted to. And I was like, that's just a dick just to be a dick. I don't really want to do that either. And I was like, well, I should play it tried and true. I mean, really, I should because my wife's going to go out there with me. It's like we have a wedding anniversary coming up, and this is, I mean, she's never been to the East Coast. Like, hey, babe, do you want to check out all the great parts of Jersey?
yeah, there's a wedding anniversary for you.
It hasn't quite sunk in yet. I'm gonna have to kind of like extend this trip to somewhere that might be nice to go to because she's just never been back east. So now I'm like, okay, well, you know, if we both go into the shop, then I could support the Canada Red True and Proud, and then I could have her, like, you know, some Bay Area. We could show up with little Sharks and Leafs gear, and that'll be a good talking point for the guys on the show and be like, what the hell is this? What are you walking into my store with? I'm like, oh, I got some awesome stuff for you.
So how much would I have to pay for you to wear a Heavy Meta t-shirt?
How much would you have to pay?
Yeah, would I have to pay you to wear a Heavy Meta t-shirt and walk into the show with that?
Can we give him the Heavy Meta a baseball cap? There you go.
Four digits American.
Four digits. Oh, American, fuck that. I can't. That's too rich for my blood, man.
Too rich? Oh, then I got to exchange it.
Oh, God. I didn't want to go there, man.
If you want to send me 1,000 Canadian in bills to my house, then I'll definitely wear an SBU shirt. Yeah.
Hey,
no.
AYT, get on that shit.
Yeah, wait.
I will take a picture of all the funny money on the internet and be like, look, Maddie made it happen. See some SBU on AMC.
Don't even tease. The SBU might, who knows, they're a living entity. They might fucking
get a fucking Kickstarter going to get a fucking, fucking Tristan to wear our shirt.
That'd be awesome.
We have nice like levels. Like for 1,000, I'll wear the tight tee. For 2,000, you know, we'll just break it like, you know, just Hulk it style, just rip it open.
Oh yes. This sounded good. I like this idea. Let's do this.
We're gonna get screwed over because then there's gonna be like the top tier level is gonna like whoever donates that's just gonna get their name on a shirt and TSG's gonna walk in.
Yeah. That's true. Someone will pay $10,000 and fuck it all up. Oh, man. So are you going to be heading to Vegas there?
You know, I up until a couple of weeks ago, that was entirely the plan. We'd had a hotel paid for and ready to go. But with my wedding anniversary coming up and school loans having eaten what used to be my money, it's just easier not to go right now. And it's really rough because I very much want to be there. As much as now, knowing how many people are going to be there, I'm kind of happy I'm not going to be there.
VIP, baby, to connect with
a bunch of guys that I've been talking to, but unfortunately I will not be in attendance.
Oh, I looking forward to meeting you, man.
I am breaking a lot of balls here, and I apologize for that.
Sorry, you got to do what you got to do, man. Bills and wives come first.
You know, we got married in Vegas too. To me, as soon as I heard about this announcement, I was like, oh, this is perfect. I can kill two birds with one stone.
Yeah, we're in Vegas, honey. Where are you going? I'm just going to go play Magic all day and all night. Here's somebody.
I'll see you in a couple days. It'll be fine. You right. Girls, Manny Petties. I'll talk to you later.
I got you some tickets for a show. Yeah. go see a Magic show. So, no, that's cool, man. I mean, we are – obviously, me and Kevin are really excited. We've talked about it since episode one about going to Vegas.
Yeah, it's crazy because it was right around when, like, this got announced, right? You know, what was it, the beta episode or episode one? And, like, here it is the week before we go. Like, we've been planning it since then. The week before we go, I got to sit here and open PAX on air and, like, going to go get wrecked in Vegas next week. It's going to be awesome.
Now, we have to kind of get into the shadows here because – The Heavy Met SUU, Kevy, you have to admit, there is no other show on the planet that we can basically say, hey, guys, you know, since I'm flying out Thursday morning, I can't cut a show. You know, even if we record it, I won't have time to cut it. So there's going to be no Heavy Met next week. And the fans of the show are like, well, you know what? We're going to get on. We're going to create our own show. We're going to take over Heavy Met for the week you're away. Don't worry about it.
Yeah,
like,
dude,
what
that's,
the
that's
fuck
so
are you talking
funny.
About?
It's crazy. Yeah, we've got
they
like
reject me on that one too.
Oh, that's so fucking
Robot Large, you got to give it to him. He's spearheading this thing. So here's how it's going to go down, guys. Get a hold of him and ignore. Just try to keep it down low so KYT doesn't know. Because like I said, I go, you don't tell the boss you're going to throw a party in his house. You wait till he goes, and then you throw the fucking party, and then you clean fucking up after. But what it looks like Robot Large is going to do, he's gonna do an episode. He's going to bring all the SVU on and off, and let you guys come on, talk. I hope you guys try to follow a bit of the show, and then if God willing, maybe KYT will let you guys post it on the site. But as long as you do good, I think he'll do it. I think he'll
We've
do
got
it.
To be like the first Magic podcast in history that their fan club is doing their own
I know,
podcast.
Right? Like, could you imagine it's like the Toronto Maple Leafs or any hockey club. They're like, okay, the fans are like, you know what? You guys, don't worry. We're going to play the game for you.
Yeah, hey, we all need a break this week. we're going out of town, so you guys go ahead and just do it up.
Yeah. Freaking crazy. So shout out to all the SVU. You guys are fucking awesome. I think that's
no. What cracked me up was like Slick Jagger said something. He's just all, dude, an SVU podcast. I gotta get in on this. I was like, dude, aren't you gonna be in Vegas with us?
Yeah, he's like, fuck that.
Shit.
Yeah, his Insta reaction is fuck that. I'm playing with these guys. You guys can have the show. but yeah, that's my shout out this week, man. And basically just shouting out Vegas because it's gonna be sick, man.
So I gotta know, show of hands, who's been to Vegas already?
I've been to Vegas.
Okay.
I've been to Vegas hundreds of times. It's 4 hours.
If you've listened to I believe it's episode 21, you can hear the story of the Dragon Lady from Vegas.
Yeah, the Dragon Lady from Vegas. Yeah. I actually lived like when I was in like first grade for like my whole first grade year. I lived in Vegas. With my mom and we moved in with my great grandma, and yeah, that's why I was only there for a year. I think my mom lost her shit and said, "Fuck this, we're going back to California."
So then, on this trip weekend, what spots outside of Cashman Center for this event do you have to go to, and then what spots do you want to go to?
Well, I mean, okay, so yeah, so what we've done is we've rented a house where.
Oh, I've heard. Yeah. I mean, you tell me. Are you telling me you're going to get to Vegas, you're going to crash the GP, and there's just going to be the whatever the Storm Brewery heavy meta?
No. I mean, so like me, I'm going down with Durf, Ryan, and And Marcel, like, we're all big foodies, so Thursday night we're probably going to go to some crazy tasting thing.
Is it, Reiku?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm letting them figure it out. I'm like, whatever. It's all good.
That's right. What, like, Ryan's was saying. Like, it's Reiku on Thursday night. I'm not going to make that because I'm not going to be in until, like, late as shit Thursday night probably.
Yeah, and it's probably going to be an expensive as fucking hell dinner.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be ridiculous. And then there's I think they're doing Lotus of Siam on Saturday. Oh wait, no. No, Lotus of Siam Friday night, because Saturday night is our barbecue.
Yes.
Either way, Friday or Saturday night, Lotus is going to be out the door. I hope they know what's going to hit them.
Ryan tried to make reservations at Lotus.
It's 2 years in advance.
Like, it's ridiculous. I don't remember how long in advance it was, but it was like out of hand, the advance reservations.
There's no advance reservations. It's 2 years out. So basically, they have a walk-in policy, but it's like an hour and a half lineup or more. So
that's ridiculous. Yeah, I don't know
if that's going to work. Yeah.
Step one, pay the guy that scrubbed out of the tournament to go stand in line at Lotus.
Yes.
That's me.
Yeah, that's Kevin. Round
one. It's like you're getting paid.
I mean, you just go cheaper. You'd be like, look, if you take the cab down there, I pick up your dinner tab. Just get down there. Call us.
I can go with that. I could do that.
I'm gonna convince those guys, like, hey, I scrubbed out like fucking right after I opened my packs and just said fuck this. So I'll go stand in line all day. But then the problem is like by the time I get like even close to the front of the line, I'm gonna be passed out drunk and lose their spot in line anyway. But I already have the money in my pocket.
Yeah, so someone will take it. No, we can't take Kevin. I don't trust him. No,
literally,
I mean,
I don't want any of you guys to trust me for anything from fucking Thursday night to like Monday morning.
Now, here,
entertain you.
Since this will be our last episode before we go, we have to take, and everyone has to. We'll see who wins this bet. But there's no doubt in my mind this is going to be the biggest GP ever. Now let's pick numbers. How many people are showing up to this damn thing? It's got to be over 3,000.
Easily,
right? Yeah.
Easily. Well, shit. They
tell you what. I'll set the line.
Like I saw. I'm trying to remember what. The pre-registration was already like at
2,600. No, pre-reg is 2,600 and it's capped. So
I'm guessing that it's going to be about 4,200. But where do we want to set the line at 3,700 for the over/under?
Why would you say 42 and then set a line way below that? Shouldn't the line be 42?
That way I can take the easy over.
Yeah, exactly. He's a wily fair at that fucker. I think this is gonna be over 4,500. I think this is just gonna smash the shit out of things. It's got to.
Yeah.
It's all right. Does anyone else dispute 45? One of us wants to take the over, and one of us wants to take the under. So
you got to say the line's at 4,000 then.
That's too generous.
Well, then we're all taking
is
over.
It? No,
well,
come on.
42.5.
All right, fine. Okay, well, let's go 43 then. I got to go over because...
Half. 4,300 and a half. Who wants the over?
4,300 and a half. I'll go over.
It's got to be over that, man.
So yeah, you know, you know how good I am at gambling.
Does anyone think it would crest 5,000?
Look, here's my whole thing. There's if you want the philosophy of the betting line here, Magic players are lazy. I love them.
They are lazy.
The percentage of people, I mean, I think that Grampy Portland was like the highest percentage of people that pre-regged versus what the actual number at the end of the day ended up being. And there was a lot of incentive to do so. As we're here, you've kind of run out of incentive to do so. So I don't, other than like being part, like other than hoping to get the t-shirt that says I was one of the 3,000 people that pre-reg for GP Vegas, I don't think there's any real incentive to pre-reg at this point. So to me, you know, everyone just wants to show up. You know, it used to be for Magic, like if you were on the ball, you showed up the night before at the Grand Prix. That way you laughed at all the guys standing in line Saturday morning and you went and got a cup of coffee. You know, nowadays, you want to be the guy that signed up online to laugh at everybody during Friday when they're signing up. But I still think, overall, Magic players are lazy. So if 2,600 or something crazy number of people decided to pre-reg, that's got to be, at most, 65% of the people that are going to show up overall for a tournament.
I agree with that. Especially since it's Vegas, right? I think there's a much higher percentage of people flying in for this because it's Vegas.
But that doesn't mean they can't pre-register. I think that's...
Yeah, but why... Okay, well... Who would fly in and not pre-register? That's just stupid.
Yeah, there you go, Maddie, right there.
Right? I don't know. Who knows? Regardless, I guarantee you the pre-registers have already convinced Wizards of the Coast to do Modern Masters 2. I guarantee you it's in production right now.
It's not about, it's not about
that. I just hope that they do it in Vegas every
storm
year.
That is this Grand Prix. It's going to be very, very, very hard to replicate all the circumstances that are happening for this specific Grand Prix. Not only do you have a limited format, where now you're effectively getting six packs at what is retail, which is not what, you know, term entry used to be for a Grand Prix. Not only are you holding it the weekend after every single high school and college graduation, not only are you holding it in the one city where, you know, liquor flows easier than water, but you're doing it around the biggest buzz of an event ever. I mean, this is the Woodstock of Magic. Like, they're not going to see more people coming out of the woodwork just to be like, I was fucking there. Were you fucking there? I didn't think so.
TSG just made the new shirt. I was fucking there. Were you?
Yeah.
That's the shirt that...
Yeah, I didn't fucking think so.
Yeah, the back of the shirt has to say that. I didn't think so. That's awesome. No, I think it's going to be a blast. I don't have a lot of time, so, you know, when I first heard this, I heard Marshall announce this way back on I think it was a Pro Tour coverage, they announced it. And I was like, well, if there's one thing I'm going to go to, fuck it. It's got to be this. So, I mean, let's hope it lives up to the hype. I don't know. Maybe it'll be so overcrowded it could be run badly, but...
I don't know how much I really give a fuck about what
happens right,
in the tournament. that's why we've got the, like, I mean, you know,
we have backups.
The tournament. We've got the house, we've got the barbecue, we've got the party, we've got the booze cube fucking champio fucking tournament.
And like, I'm telling you guys, that's the whole point of this event now. It's not about, I'm going to go kick down 4,500 people and win $3,500, because that's BS. Right. It's about saying that I went to this thing with my friends this weekend, and we, you know, we played Magic for 36 hours straight. We had guys literally passing out on each other with their draft decks in their hands. Like, we went to this experience. You know, like, to be the guy that wins this Grand Prix doesn't mean anything.
No, it's true.
I mean, shit.
You're going to look at that guy, and you're going to laugh. Because, like, dude, you entered, like, the worst EV tournament ever as far as, like, winning goes. Like, you entered a great EV tournament for showing up and getting product. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, your sealed pool is worth more than your first place winnings.
Well, the side events alone, I think, like, I don't know how much, I wish we had more time, because I want to do so many things. Like, I'm excited to play the Mini Masters on Friday, and just get some practice in and just see what the cards do and shit.
I mean, again, you're hitting it right on the head. It's not about the main event. It's not about being, I'm the guy that won GP Vegas. It's about playing as much Magic with your close friends as you can over the course of this 3 or 4 days and all the things you can do in Liquor City. And that, I mean, that's this event's so incredible.
So here's a really good Desert Island question. If you go to a tournament and you were allowed to only bring one format of a deck, what would you bring? Is it Cube, Commander, Standard? What?
It's Cube by a mile. You're asking the wrong guy.
Is it? So you are just Cube all the way?
I mean, Cube is what kept me in Magic to the level that I was able to get back to, you know, able to do a weekly show that was relevant. I mean, when I've talked about Cube in the past, I mean, for me, you know, if you want to go deep on this, and you guys are all about story time, and fuck, you know, as far as I can tell, we're only halfway through the show.
That's right.
We'll give you TSG story time.
Hell yeah!
You know, when I first found Magic, I was 9 years old, and it was the amalgamation of everything I felt like I loved at that time. It was sword and sorcery. It was collectible like baseball cards. It was competition like Little League. It was, you know, mental testing against the jock kids who even at that age were better than you, that you could show them up at something. And you know, when I got to middle school, it was funny because I was in sixth grade, and most of the kids that played Magic were in eighth grade, because that's what it took. And for like the first 4 months of the school year, they just assumed I was the same age as them and that I had the same classes they did. And we played Magic all the time. And that was like, that was my middle school experience. I mean, sure, you know, other card games came around and took some of my time and energy. And I definitely remember walking home from school and debating whether or not to buy Dual Lands or Pogs. And I might have made the wrong decision once or twice. But at the end of the day, you know, all of middle school was about playing Magic, about, you know, collecting these cards and meeting people, and, you know, some meeting friends I still have today. that, you know, because we played this game. Once you got to high school, Magic was not cool. I mean, by the time I got to high school, some of the people that I've gone to middle school with, they're juniors in high school. You find them the first week of freshman year, and you're like, hey, Rudy, I haven't seen you in 2 years. You want to play cards? Like, dude, that's not cool. And it was this rough kind of like coming to terms with, well, you know, I'm going to have to look other places for Magic players. Like, do I still want to play Magic? Is that my identity? Now you're in high school. You're like, well, you know, Magic packs, a 40, I don't know. And, you know, by the time later in high school rolled around, it was like, well, I could sell Magic cards and not have to get a shitty, like, waiter job or something. And Mercadian Masks had just come out, and Magic was about as shitty as you ever thought it could possibly get. So I sold a ton of stuff. I wasn't playing as much. Instead of having a job in high school, I just, you know, sold Magic cards. And that kind of got me through to out of high school. And then when out of high school, not long after that, you know, I moved in with some guys that, you know, we played games on and off, went through a Counter-Strike phase. But we played Magic. We knew about Magic. And you know, one of my roommates at the time, who hadn't really played competitively ever, was like, hey, you know, do you want to, like, play this game for real? And I was like, what do you mean for real? He's like, you know, like that old, like, 1996 World Champs video we all watch? Like, yeah. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I'm not really – I'm fucking dicking around, like, you know, pretending to go to community college and playing Counter-Strike all day. Like, sure, why not? So that household of people, like, we just got super into it. The game became huge for us. You know, we collected everything. We played Vintage. We played – you know, there was no Legacy back then. It was just Extended. You know, we built up a huge collection. We played all the time. We traveled up and down the state into Nevada to play Magic. And then, you know, the poker boom hit and everything changed. You know, it wasn't so much about having fun playing Magic. It was about, like, hey, I don't need to go to school or get a job. I can play cards. Magic can be the fun thing we do, and poker could be the money-making thing we do. And that was really what dominated the mid-2000s for me. And where Cube kind of intersects with me playing Magic was when I just didn't have as much time for Magic. I was interested in playing, but I couldn't keep up with Standard, and it was slipping away from me. And I'd heard about Tom LaPille's Cube, and a friend of ours had built it. We were playing this super sweet, you know, like, battlecruiser Magic, having shit running into each other, playing with cards that I'd loved in our youth that we just never got to play with in competitive formats. And it always reminds me of, like, Sylvan Library, like, opening up that card in, like, 2006 and being like, wow, you just never had a reason to play with this card ever since, like, 1996. It's awesome. And so for me, that was really what grounded me in Magic. You know, as much as I would come in and out of the game, I wanted to play Cube. I wanted there to be this kind of, like, open dialogue with players. And this is, you know, this is before Twitter. This is before, you know, the onslaught of social media and connected players that we have. And, you know, Evan Irwin's video about Cube was that first kind of, like, video segment ever.
Yes, like, I remember watching that and thinking, I have no idea what he's talking about. What the fuck is a Cube?
But like, you know, like, his little interviews with his friends, every single one of those interviews was like, yeah, that's awesome. Like, I would love to do that in a limited environment. I would love to play those games. I would love to have those experiences. I would love to make those card evaluations. And that's what really drove me to not only build a Cube, but be inspired to want to, like, share my stories and share my feelings about it and want to do more. I mean, when Channel Fireball was in its infancy, I wrote Cube articles because that's what I loved and that's what I wanted to contribute to the community. And, you know, in this moment right now, that's what I'm trying to do most. And I just love it, no matter how much, because you never quit. I don't give a shit what
no,
you say.
No, you don't.
You're not quitting Magic. And I've quit Magic.
Hell no.
I've quit Magic once legitimately, like, you know, the five row of commons into the dumpster legitimately.
Ooh.
But I've never, you know, you can't leave it. I mean, we're all addicted to it. Thankfully, it's not going to kill us like cigarettes. It's going to do some other weird thing to us in another 30 years. Who knows what it's going to be.
There's lead in the ink from China. No!
But you just love the game too much. And to me, as long as I can evaluate every new set that comes out for Cube, stay that close to the game, no matter how far away I go, no matter what parts of the globe I go to, no matter how many children I father, no matter what happens, I will always have that experience. And in theory, I could walk into any local game store, I could find people playing Magic, and if I did the right thing in the community, if I got that message out there, they would know what Cube was, they could sit down and play it and have a great experience. And that's been my goal with Magic for so long. You know,
so here's the question. Powered Cube or non-powered?
Powered Cube.
So you only play powered?
I don't only play one thing. My cube is powered. My cube is magic history. My cube was like, I wept a tear when I cut Sheevan Dragon.
Oh, you cut him, eh?
Oh, wow.
It took a long time. Like, not only did I cut it, I eventually sold my beta one because I was getting such a good price on it.
Oh.
I mean,
wow.
It's like gut-wrenching, that feeling.
I know. Like, the way I look at it is, like, it's funny because the more cards, every set, of course, it's the general power creep of the game, and eventually I'm sure we'll get to a point where every card is better than every other card ever printed because that's where the game is going. And sometimes I'm like, I just want a nostalgic cube because I just want to play. I know they're not the best option sometimes, but it's like to see the look on my friends' faces when they, like, cast those older cards and, like, oh my god, remember when we played with this? And it's a whole adventure that night. I like that too, you know?
Nail on the head, Maddie. It's exactly what I want. And, you know, it took a lot of berating from people about cards like Raging Cougar and Sheevan Dragon to finally cut them from my queue. But, you know, it got to this point of mockery. Well, it was like, oh my god, I cast Sheevan Dragon. Oh yeah, well this one time, I attacked with it. Ha 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 ha. So it became like this little sub-game. And I remember I got, you know, one of the guys, actually, Sam Pardee, Grand Prix winner Sam Pardee, queue with him all the time. And there was a match once where he was trying to fuck with me, and he was playing Sheevan Dragon. And I actually briberied it out of his deck and killed him with it.
Just to kill him with it. That's awesome.
I mean, you have to understand, it was not the best choice to bribery for. Like, obviously, but not the best creature.
You were sending a message. I get it.
Message sent. I don't know if it was received, but message sent.
I hope you get it, bro. No, you know, it's funny, too, because I've got the cube bug right now, and I'm, you know, thank God, you know, for proxies, because, and I'm curious to see your stance on this, but for the average person, a cube is $10,000. Like, you know, and that's not even a high-end foil cube with alternate art crap. That's just, like, it's expensive. And, you know, if it wasn't for the proxy guy and, like, the ability to, like, fill in some of these 100 expensive cards, especially if you want power in your cube, without proxies, it's just impossible to do. And so I'm curious, like, what is your stance on proxies, and do you think, you know, do they have a place in cube, or – you know, you're like, nope, it's original. Everything is original. Like, you just don't fuck with the cube by putting that kind of shit in there.
Yeah, I mean, it's really tough because I'm one of those people where it's like, you know, I want to be in Wizards' good graces. Like, I still want to make a run for the Community Cup. I'd like an opportunity to be given, you know, more opportunities to work with them, play with them, and be in that community because I consider myself, you know, a huge wealth of knowledge for the game. And I would definitely accept a job working in brand for them because I think that I can do it. I think that I can make this game grow.
You know what? I think you would actually be very good there. Well, I could absolutely see you doing that.
So I
got my vote.
So you have to understand that the official Wizards of the Coast policy on proxies is they do not exist.
Of course.
And you can't. Right. I mean, if you want to hear a great like short story on that, I can't name names, but. I had some Wizards of the Coast employees playing my cube, and we were somewhere, and we were just like going to take some pictures and just like have fun with the games. And a certain member of Wizards of the Coast stopped me, and he was like, you know, hey, if any of these are proxies, you can't show us playing with them. And I said, no.
Wow.
And I said, no. That Betamax Ruby is real. Don't worry about it. Just sit back and smile. So that, I mean, it's a really fine line. And, you know, it's their business. It's their livelihood to sell cards. And if you undercut them and you just
circumvent it. You see, here's what I don't understand. I will never, ever pay for a Black Lotus. And at first, I just don't have the money. So if I proxy a Black Lotus, then they haven't lost a dime. Like, I understand, like, yeah, sure, if you go proxy. Yeah, well, I don't think standard competitive players buy proxies. They just don't do it. Like, the people who buy proxies are people who just would never afford those cards. And they're not going to go bust booster packs to get them. Or, I don't know. I think proxies aren't as evil as, you know, Wizards of the Coast deems them to be. And I get it, it's a gray line, but
when you're talking to any of these people that represent the company one-on-one, they're not going to tell you that they are.
Yeah, they're, of course. It's a legal line.
We're talking about a hand-tied situation. We're talking – now we're starting to skirt the issue of the reserve list. what's reprintable, what's not, the whys. Again, if you talk to any Wizards employee one-on-one, you know, again, I'm not going to name names, they get it.
They're logical.
We all want to play more Magic. We all want to have those experiences. And I have definitely played with my fair share of proxy cubes. You know, you want a little shout out to the proxy guy? I love when he takes stuff and makes it old border, old frame, old text.
Hell yeah.
That stuff tickles me pink because it always brings me back to my childhood. I love that. And to me, that's a large experience of what cube drafting is recapturing Magic in all of the timeline. I mean, I would never play with any Sylvan library that wasn't the Legends Sylvan library, because as much as it's in English, I love it when people stop and have to read it like four times, and then you still have to come over their shoulder and be like, actually, it works like this.
But yeah, it doesn't.
There's four lives on it. That's so cute. So again, I strive to make cube be something that you don't have to go down that road, but I'm not going to outly condemn somebody for doing it because we all want to play the game and have fun. I mean, on an episode of my show recently, we did a skeleton cube list. We were like, hey, you know, if you want to build a cube from scratch tomorrow with Magic cards, here's a great jumping off point. Here's 360 cards, no card in it costs more than $100. And you can build this. I mean, at the end of the day, yeah, it was still like $2,600 to build the whole thing from scratch. If you bought every single card with nothing costing more than $100 at the time. But it was like, hey, you know, this is a good place to start. I mean, one of the most funs with cube that you only get to really do once is the start from scratch and the build it. I mean, I remember when my cube was a pretty tall stack of Magic cards sitting on my desk. And every day it was like, oh, man, can we just play with it already?
Here's a question for you. Do you think that they should turn around and make a silver bordered set then for this is the cube product?
Okay, so I got to interrupt. So this is, I agree 100%. I think if the whole gold and silver bordered card issue is basically saying fuck you to the reserve list in a non-legally binding way. But if they ever did that, like let's say they made a $99 starter cube with 100 cards, I think that would just make the real Magic players who love Magic happy as shit.
So, already on the cast, we've talked about how price point in the secondary market set by WotC is bad news for everybody, and they're trying to stay away from that. Ironically, on my podcast very recently, I think this was like two episodes ago, we were talking about that potential cube product. Actually, it was like right before Modern Masters dropped, and everyone kind of got their hands on this crazy limited format. My co-host, a good friend of mine, cube with him for a long time, Kyle Eck, he came up with this, as far as I could tell, out of the blue. And it is a spectacular idea that I could see implementing. I wish they would implement. I think it would be awesome. Take this, you know, Phantom Cube product, this cube in a box product. Don't make it a Commander's Arsenal. Don't make it a From the Vault set. Don't, you know, beat around the bush about the high MSRP. Replace your stupid, you know, Sunday shootout Grand Prix tournaments where you win a flight to Seattle and a dinner with R&D. Replace that with a tournament where the winner walks away with the cube box that's like MSRP for $500. Not only am I sticking around on a Grand Prix weekend to play for that thing and win it, but you also have the opportunity to reward those local game stores that have, you know, done a ton for the game over the course of the year by sending them one of these things so they can run their own tournament and give it away.
Is it real cards?
Do you think they do that or just sell it?
No, hold on.
Go silver bordered with like a completely different back. I mean, the product doesn't necessarily have to be an official Magic product.
Landed on the World Championship chip style.
Yes.
Border front, you know, alternate border backs. I think that's the way you kind of have to do this product. And I think that's the best way to do it. But this could be a real thing. Not only do you make this awesome event for Sundays on Grand Prix that now, you know, it's like when the vintage champ wins, you know, Time Walk the artwork.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, 1% of the population is going to be super stoked to have that, and 99% of that population sees a paycheck. But Wizards of the Coast cuts it in the way they want to. It's just like Judge Foils.
Yeah, I agree.
They don't cut you a paycheck for the amount of time you work that weekend. They give you shiny pieces of cardboard that you then turn into the money that offset the cost of you going to that event. If you make this product, not only do you have something awesome that slowly puts this into the community, but you also get to reward those local game stores that try so hard to get PTQs that want to run quality events. You have an amazing way to reward them.
I think that's brilliant.
Premier level store, once or twice a year, Wizards will, you know, make a deal out of it, send it to you. They can put your store on their event locator and say, hey, there's going to be a cube event at this store. It's, you know, it's not a PTQ, but it's pretty close. You can walk away with this very unique item. You know, MSRP is maybe $400 or $500. And we all know what MSRP from Wizards means. It's really worth like
$1,000.
I think that would be absolutely spectacular. I think that's the way you get more, you know, quote unquote cube cards into the community without, you know, talking about proxies, without worrying about ways to reprint Jace.
Well, I mean, those are effectively proxies because they're not Magic cards.
I mean, what's a Magic card, Maddie?
A Magic card is the official back, right?
So you're telling me that Wizards of the Coast can print, you know, Jace the Mind Sculptor front, you know, Beanie Baby's backs, and that's not a Magic card?
Absolutely. I bet even Wizards would agree that it isn't.
Well, maybe not Beanie Babies. Maybe more of a hat.
Well, I mean, hey, like, anyways, I really think that's a brilliant idea. I would love, like, to not only give game stores, instead of them, like, giving them Commander's Arsenals where they jack the price, let them, like, say, hey, keep those at the MSRP, and, like, we'll give you these, like, cube boxes. I think that... that's insane. It's a brilliant idea. Please go get a job at Wizards and fucking institute this right now, because I want to play for this.
Yeah, see, the problem is that I kind of made a bad impression with the brand manager, so that's kind of put me in a rough spot. How it was when he wasn't happy about it. Intro deck. Whose stupid idea were those?
He's like, mine.
That's terrible.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, anything that, like, I love Cube. Like, it's funny, like, my cube's only, like, 240 cards deep already, but we still keep playing with it because we're like, oh my god, just throw anything in there just to play, like, because it's so much fucking fun.
When I first started cubing, I took, like, a ton of the three-color Legends rares and just put them in there for nostalgia. I was like, oh yeah, you want to play with, you know, Gwendolyn DeCourcy and Lady Evangela and Sheila Angus McKenzie? They're in there. They were 15 picks pretty regularly. But a lot of times people be like, oh, I remember this card. When was the last time you saw this card? This is amazing.
Boss Monster.
I think the cube has evolved to a point now where, you know, it's its own living, breathing entity. It's not, you know, three or four guys that have a blog or a website that post about it. It's really community-based. And, you know, MTGO has gone a long way in legitimizing it, making it more of a real thing, bringing it to people. And I feel validated in many ways for wanting to contribute to it, and I'm driven to want to bring that experience to everyone. And as hard as it is to get, you know, emails and tweets from people being like, look at my cube, tell me what you want to change, it's like, dude, that's so hard. I mean, what I would do is I'd take out like 200 of your cards, I'd insert like 500 from my list, and I'd probably play my cube.
I would take yours, turn it upside down, and put it in the garbage, and then I would put all my cards in
there. Well, no, I mean, like, you know, people have their own flavors, and I try to do a really good job on our show about talking about just, like, general philosophy. It's like, you know, at the end of the day, my podcast, my video cast, which I guess I should plug you soon here.
Hell yeah.
It is ultimately about the cube we play with, but we want to talk about bigger things. I mean, just this week we did a show about Red. And we talked about, you know, in many ways how narrow it can feel or how narrow it can be, and kind of expanding on that to try to have there be more than, like, seemingly one archetype for Red and what else you can bring to the table for it. And that kind of leads into discussion. Well, it's like, well, you know, in the cube we play with every week, we have these cards.
Yeah.
Chaos Warp.
No.
That was in there for
the only Red removal.
Chaos Warp is definitely one of those cards where people stop the games around you to watch and see what goes down. But that's kind of where the excitement ends and the playability drops off, because it's not always that good. But
I think we're hitting the 2-hour mark, so we'll hit shout outs to wrap it up. But man, I mean, you know, I think you're right on everything we touched on. You know, I think you're a great guest, by the way, and I'm excited to see you start to get back into more of these podcasts and maybe even a video series.
We'll see. I've talked to some websites about doing content in the past, and for me, it's just an issue of time. And you know, for a while there, when just everyone and their mom had the wrong idea, it was just like, why even bother? I'm just gonna get shit on.
Just for future notice, if you ever get accused of anything, come out right away as hard as you can with your opinion.
Start breaking legs.
Yeah, don't sit silent, because like a lot of your supporters were like, what is he fucking doing? Just say something, man.
That's a word for that one, for sure.
Well, hey, I'll go with something different so we're off that subject so he doesn't have to keep rehashing it, Matt. at any rate, I was getting some flack for it because last week I ended up suggesting people to pick up Thought Seizes because it was not in Modern Masters. And the fact is that it had dropped down on MTGO a little bit and sitting at, like, 30 in comparison to the 60 that it's in paper. What's your thoughts on that?
Are you asking me how I feel about Thought Seize?
Yes, and whether or not it would actually be a card worth picking up and has value on MTGO.
So here's the thing about Thoughtseize, is that anyone that plays Modern should just have four already, so it really shouldn't be affecting them. And the value of Thoughtseize is going to have a lot, surprisingly a lot to do with the value of Modern Masters. I know that seems counterintuitive on the surface, but right now, players aren't seeing an impact on the prices of Modern cards with the release of Modern Masters, and a lot of them are kind of just, like, frustrated, kind of being like, oh, this was, where are my $70, $60, $50, $40 Tarmogoyfs? Ah, oh, I'm so mad. And you're gonna have to wait
right. For
a longer term here to really see how impactful it is. It's very possible that the growth of the Modern format is not going to be lessened by the release of all these cards. In fact, you might see the inverse.
Yep, and it's already happening.
This entire summer to be like, play more Modern! And more people are like, oh, shit, maybe I should play more Modern. At the end of the day, there's going to be an even higher demand, and that's when you're going to see Thoughtseize be like, this card you have to have because it's just that good. And granted, there's still a little bit of speculation that it could find its way into another set. You know, it's not mechanic-specific. You could see it in M14, which would be a shocker for the set, although a great twist, I feel, for the set.
Right.
But
that would be good.
Yeah, I don't see it to be in a core set, but I think it might see Theros. But see, that's the thing, too, is that I believe that, or at least here's what my thought was. As long as you just keep an eye on the spoilers, that the card really only has room to move back up at this point. And I know that the past for the card has been lower, but something that I've been noticing a lot with MTGO and paper, at least for the older sets, is that the older cards still try to creep up towards paper prices, even though that MTGO, and by far and large, is a lot cheaper than paper.
See, well, I think, well, there's a bit of irony there, because if there was any place where I would expect Thoughtseize to go up immediately, it would be online, because with the amount of Modern Masters that's going to flood the MTGO market, because it's just going to be standing water, it can't go anywhere, it can't leave. Like, there's going to be an actual saturation online for players, but the cards that aren't in that set are going to be a lot more sought after. So, if anything, I think that Thoughtseize online in the short run is an excellent pickup, as where IRL, it's going to be much more of a standoffish situation.
Now, here's something. So, I've been watching Dark Confident and Tarmogoyf on MTGO drop, and this week they started going back up. And I'm like, doesn't Modern Masters get dropped this Thursday night?
Yep.
So why the fuck is it going back up? Are people just trying to hedge the bet that Dark Confident at $17 bucks is the bottom?
The chick at our at my LGS when I went down to pick up the box today was mentioning, and I haven't looked at it or anything, but it was mentioned, I guess SCG brought the price of the Modern Masters Tarmogoyf back up some, or brought it up more from what it was sitting at. And so I'm wondering if people are like, you know, the people that are, like, you know, sitting on these fucking Goyfs and shit like that on Modo are looking at what maybe what the market's doing in paper and kind of trying to follow suit with that.
That's such irony because it's not – Star City Games adjusting the price on IRL Tarmogoyfs should have zero impact on MTGO.
Oh, absolutely. I agree 100%, but I'm wondering, like, that seems to be, I mean, especially with some, you know, the way this community works and the way I've even, just in the short time I've been in it and seen just how, and especially on Modo, how fast the fucking prices change and the prices move, and, like, that hive mind mentality that as soon as anything starts happening in the Magic community, it's full force. It snowballs. And so I could easily see that, like, somebody looking at that, like, oh, hey, the prices of these Tarmogoyfs are going up in paper.
Hoard them. Yeah.
Oh, you know what? So, fuck it. Let's start bumping the price up. Somebody notices that, you know, one bot chain pops the prices up a little bit. And then, you know, somebody notices that and they're like, oh, shit, we should knock ours up too. And, like, it just snowballs and it goes that direction. Until, and it happens like that with all sorts of different in all sorts of different aspects of the prices of cards. I see it all the time. It's like until finally everybody realizes, oh, wait, it's not worth that. And people realize that people are – it gets to a point people aren't paying that, and then it starts coming down again.
Yeah, it's called hoarding and speculation. Yeah. And it's rampant on MTGO.
Yeah, it's just it's gotten, like, exponentially worse in the short time that I've been around and even been, like, privy to any of this.
Oh, okay. You know, you like, haven't seen the days when cards end up getting banned, such as when Mystical Tutor ended up getting banned in Legacy. I watched it in 5 minutes drop from $20 down to $5.
Wow, that fast.
That's funny.
So it, TSG, so if you were to give one pick out of Dragon Maze that you think is, you know, a cube-worthy, you know, foil card that's going to be, you know, get it now because in a couple years this is going to be the shit card. Is it Voice of Resurgence? Is that even a cube card?
You know, in the update that we did, it wasn't included, and that's because the green-white section is a hotly debated section, and I have maybe too long of too strong of a love for Gaddock Teague, but we discussed that on the show at great length.
Oh, dude.
I will stand by and defend Gaddock Teague for a lot longer in the hopes that he proved me right. That being said, Voice of Resurgence could probably still find a home in the cube. But you kind of have to look at how we break down the cube to really understand. I love Advent of the Worm. I love Trisani Summoner. I love
the Mimic, Progenitor Mimic.
Oh, I was talking about just Celestia cards.
Oh.
But as far as maybe sleepers for cube, it's hard to say. I mean, I think Foil Far and Ways are going to be excellent value in the long run. I think that card is just value all over it. It's going to be a card that's never going to leave the cube. You know, Progenitor Mimic is going to be just a huge casual card once, like, the other 90%+ of the Magic community wakes up to the rules change and all of
Yeah, because Mimic with the white Kamigawa dragon is going to be disgusting.
Yeah,
a little bit of a lock, yeah. But again, that's more, to me, that's a little more commander than it is cube. Because the thing about Progenitor Mimic is it's still a 6-mana clone from 2 colors. It's not exactly the biggest powerhouse. 4 cube, but you know it's still going to have more value than it has today. Like if you want to pick up cards for cube at a Dragon's Maze, that is a very safe choice. It's like, you know, like don't go all in on Ral Zarex if you think he's bottomed out. and that guy's still got room to fall.
Well, funny enough, so Ral Zarex, been watching him go all the way down to 7-5 tickets. I think he went to. Am I right? But he went back up now on MTGO. He's
to kicked in.
On MTGO, he is 8.6.
Yeah, he's 8.6. So, I mean, I tweeted that, like, earlier in the week. I'm like, I think if you're going to get in, he's probably – I don't think he's going to go much lower than that. He's an interesting planeswalk. He was really – he looked like he had so much potential, and maybe he's just not in the current standard environment. He's worth it. Like, it works very well, and he's sidelining right now. Maybe come rotation, things will be different, but I tried to make him work with Rukhthar. I tried, people. I tried to get turn 5.
Tristan, I have to ask. If you like Teague, does that mean that you like things like 3-sphere?
It's funny. I run like every other sphere except for Trinisphere. I run Thorn of Amethyst, Sphere of Resistance, and a little more obvious like Thalia Lodestone Golem. And recently
I was just going in that vein of, so yes. So then you wouldn't be adverse to doing something like dropping a Cataclysm and then dropping Teague afterwards or, you know,
no,
just that sort of thing.
Those kind of plays happen all the time. I mean, I've definitely been the guy that, like, is holding Green Sun Zenith and, like, Elspeth Knight Errant and desperately trying to get someone to block my goddamn Gaddock Teague and no one will do it.
Yep, I've been there too.
But, you know, you take the good with the bad. I've definitely, like, resolved that card and just had the Blue Mage kind of shrug his shoulders and be like, all right, I guess that's game. But, you know.
Well, I mean, we'll move to shoutouts now. And Kevy, you got anyone you need to shout out this week before Vegas?
I definitely have to give a fucking big shout out to, like, everybody in the SVU. I'm going to steal it this week, especially Robot Large for throwing this thing together for all of you guys to be able to get together and do your own cast. I think that's awesome. I'm really stoked about it. Shout out to basically, and then on that note, shout out to all of the SVU members and all of our friends and people in the community that are actually making it to Vegas that we get to go hang out with next week.
Oh, and we got a shout out. You know who we got a shout out? Ferret and Robot Large, because they're going to be keeping.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry. Ferret, you definitely, you belong in there, and I feel like a dick for leaving you out.
It's all good.
Keep the cave clean, man. Keep the cave clean.
You're below my eye level, so I always forget that you're there.
And, of course, we got to shout out, you know, TSG for coming on the show.
Yep. Well, I was definitely getting there. Big shout out to TSG for coming on and just, you know, hanging out with us and fucking having a blast. You didn't get drunk this time, but next time we're going to make you get hammered.
Well, I said before to you guys, I love your enthusiasm. I love just, you know, your passion for the game. And then listening to a few of your shows, I was like, you know what, this guy's got a good thing going on. I mean, it's not exactly the most family-friendly environment, which is rough for someone like myself who still wants to be considered for opportunities with Wizards of the Coast. But I thought, I could come on here and play ball with these guys.
Are we really that black a mark now that if you go that your resume
would you please if you ever do get rejected flat out from Wizards of the Coast and they tell you that we were thinking about it but then we heard that heavy meta episode, could you please just send us something in writing that saying that was our fault, although we'll feel terrible that we kept you out of a job at Wizards. we'll use the PR from it.
Well, I'm going to shout out to Wizards themselves and, you know, Worth, since Worth gets blamed for everything that involves MTGO, including the beta spotlight that they had today, which gave everybody but myself a headache because I purposely avoided it because I got a day off from it. So thank you, Worth.
Thank you.
That's what he shouts Worth out for. Awesome.
3 days off? Damn right.
Yeah.
TSG, you got any shout-outs?
Well, I mean, I guess I got to jam all these things together. I'm going to make a shout out to my excellent co-host, Kyle Eck, for maintaining all of the technical side of our new blog page. That is Eckamon, spelled Eckamon, .blogspot.com, where every week we broadcast live on Twitch.tv/Eckamon, our cube show called The Magic Box, pun intended. We've been running for close to 20 weeks now. We have moved our time slot around a little bit, but we've gotten upwards of 80 live viewers in the show. We've been going at a time, which has been great for keeping the chat going. But you know, sometimes we're broadcasting at midnight Pacific time, and if 10 people show up, we're pretty excited. But when it's all said, we've got the live show, we've got the podcast. If you go to the blog spot, you'll find the full cube list with all the updates. You'll find a link to the tapped out cube so you can waste hours of your day like I do when I'm sitting around just like doing mock drafts. We have the cube achievements for our cube league, which one of these days I'll have another opportunity to talk about. But if you go back to the archives of our podcast, you'll find information about the cube league. We hope to make it more of a resource if we don't do anything else there, but right now, every week, Cube Podcast. That's what we're talking about. And a great shout out to him because I, at the end of the day, I'm just a talent. I don't get my hands dirty. I don't go in there and make sure all the ones and the zeros work. But you can
that's what I do.
Yes. I'm sorry, what?
Yes. I said, hey, that's what I do. I just show up and yell and get drunk every week. Maddie and Ferret handle all that.
I am the Kevy Meta of the.
That's right.
Heart and soul, and I am the talent far and away. So check that out for sure. You know, if you can ever make one of our live shows, we'd love to be interactive. We do a lot of cool stuff, like not only pick one, pack ones from the cube, but we do some scenario setups, like, you know, your 4 picks into a draft, your 6 picks into a draft. You see these cards. What do you want to take? Those are fun. Like, I even found myself going back to some of our first ones on the Twitch archives and checking them out. So look into that kind of stuff. It's awesome. It's our passion. It's what we love to do. So that's where I'm hitting the community these days.
Awesome, man. That's totally rad. Yeah. So if you've listened to the show, TSG, you know that there's only one way the show ends, and it's with a certain shout-out. We need
2 more shout-outs, Proxy Guy and Revised Angel, and you guys better get Revised
Angel. Now I got to shout Revised Angel out? What the fuck did we sell her now? My soul? What deal
went
on?
Because we keep talking about getting her on, and then we never do, so now we're just going to go hang out with her in Vegas.
She'll be in Vegas. It'll all be
good. Probably going to be the one that saves my life when I'm face down in the pool. So
yeah, actually, you caught that crack on Twitter, right? That her missing you guys is going to be like another day at work because of Kevy.
Yep.
If it wasn't, it wouldn't be a good trip. So, please, someone, send us out. TSG, let's see if you know how. How do we close our shows?
Look, I'm Veronica Corningstone, okay?
And, liar.
You know what? That's it. That's so much better. All right, tell you what. Go fuck yourselves, San Diego.
How you close a show, my friend.
No, dude, like, you being Veronica Corningstone was fucking perfect.
If we were ever going to change the closing of the show, you've been the closest. That's up there right now. Yeah. Well, awesome, man. Thanks for coming on. It's good to have you, man.
No, I'm. I hope I was insightful and interesting for you guys. And again,
absolutely. Oh, dude, you were fine.
Yeah.
Oh, you were awesome.
Ferrets, I'm fine. That'll be my heart mic of the day. I mean, Ferret says I was.
Well,
I thought you were really good.
I'm usually not so bouncy and excitable these days. So, yeah.